Just like Hair, today's episode of Accept the Mystery, featuring 2001's The Man Who Wasn't There, starring Billy Bob Thornton, will just keep on coming until it stops. And then I'm going to mingle it with common house dirt. I don't know, skip it. JFIO presents.
What? Are you kidding? We got us some family here.
This ain't no coon, huh?
Okay, I'm not going to sit here and debate.
I'll show you the life of a man!
You will find a potion. It would not be the fortune you seek.
I suppose you think you've raised hell.
When I've raised hell, you'll know it.
Something is very wrong. I don't want Santana Abraxas. I've just been in a terrible auto accident.
What's the most you ever lost in the coin toss?
Sometimes knowledge is worse. Accept the Mystery, a Coen Brothers podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of Accept the Mystery, the Coen Brothers podcast, where we go through every single Coen Brothers movie in chronological order in line by line, exhaustive, encyclopedic, excruciating levels of detail. My name is Josh Richmond. We're recording a nighttime podcast. Usually we do this thing in like the afternoon, but due to scheduling and circumstances, it's like 9:20.
Oh my
which
God.
Gives this thing kind of an after dark vibe, which
PST,
I like.
9:20 PST.
9:20 PST. For all you guys listening who want to just kind of place us in time and space. We're in Los Angeles, California. It's 9:20, and the lights are dim, and we've got a nice kind of after dark chill vibe going on for today's, which is perfect for this black and white movie that we're about to discuss.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of chill, kind of low key, kind of slowed down. It's gonna be great.
A little jazz vibe.
Uh-huh. A little bit jazzy, yeah. Sitting across from me is my co-host, the wonderful Jackie Lechtolze.
Hello.
Hello. Wonderful to have you.
Oh my God, great to be here.
With, for the first time, your official Accept the Mystery gavel.
That's right. Order, everyone.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we did. I feel like this podcast didn't even start until you call us to order.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can now call to order. All right.
Good.
Does she have to be Judge Jackie now? Is it like...
Well, it's Judge JLZ, according to my gavel, that actually Josh Richmond made me for my birthday, which was amazing.
Yeah.
Thanks, Josh. Right.
Mm-hmm. But you could also be Judge Jackie.
I prefer Judge JLZ.
It's too close to Judge Judy.
It is. And JLZ, it's more formal. It's like my full initials, so more serious.
Is JLZ more formal? I feel like that's less formal.
It's my monogram. Like, I think that's serious,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, on a bathrobe.
That's right.
It's more formal.
Yeah.
Is it offensive if I say it sounds kind of like a DJ? If I saw that like JLZ was performing at like the Standard, I'd be like, man, JLZ's spinning some tunes. Like
man,
a dubstep guy.
JLZ and Beyoncé-Z.
BLZ.
BLZ.
Mrs. LZ.
Jules.
Sometimes I've been called Jules for JLZ, which is funny too. But no, we're gonna stick with JLZ. I think it's better.
I like
just
it.
Just more serious. Mm-hmm.
I like it because you are a serious woman.
Very serious.
Mm-hmm.
Also with us today, the other voice you hear is a performer on the UCB house team Outside Dog. His sketch comedy has appeared on the Huffington Post at Funny or Die. He also played student on the beloved TV show I'm with Busey.
Yes.
Please welcome Josh Covett to the show.
Oh, good to be here.
Welcome.
Good to be here. Hold for applause.
I think I did actually watch every episode of I'm with Busey.
Oh, did you really?
Although I'm not placing the face right now.
I was sort of, yeah, I'm student one of three. Maybe I would have been student two out of three. I sort of had a nice like three quarters, like back three quarters of my face. And it was the episode was education. And we were like pretending to be, that whole show was basically like, they would sort of tell Gary what was going on.
Right.
Like they'd be like, oh, hey, Gary, we're going to take you into a room with these. So we were cast and they're like, you're pretending you're students.
Yeah.
Even though I think one person actually was. And they're like, Gary thinks you're students. He doesn't think you're actors.
I feel like telling him too much would almost be a waste of time. It would just be like half of it's just going to go over his head. He's just
going to
do whatever he wants anyways.
And within 5 minutes of meeting him, very nice guy. But I think within 5 minutes, he told us like that he had been legally dead twice. Also, like I probably like mentions, I don't know, some sort of exotic animal he wrestled to death or something. But it was like literally like, oh, I've been dead twice. Oh, I was dead once. Yeah, a motorcycle accident.
Like, oh. I kind of believe it. I believe almost everything about him that he says.
Oh, yeah. It's like he doesn't, he has no filter. So there's no pretense.
No,
you know what I mean? It's not a facade.
Exactly.
It's just like.
No. At the very least, he believes he was dead twice. I certainly believe that.
I believe he was dead maybe even four times.
We're going to go on to our first segment of the show, which is we get to know our guest a little bit better using questions loosely inspired by the movie of the week. It is a segment called Inside Josh Covett.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3,
I can't help but say the oh no after the end. Mm-hmm.
I know. I do it now too.
Josh, and I'm not talking to myself. How's it going? So you think I'm not starting to ramble to myself in the middle of the show?
No, but if you are, you know, I won't stop.
We'll just cut that.
Perfect. Josh, in the film The Man Who Wasn't There, Ed Crane, played by Billy Bob Thornton, becomes fascinated with aliens and at one point even sees an alien spacecraft.
Yes.
Do you believe in aliens?
Oh, that's a great question.
That is a good question.
Yes, and I believe...
Sorry, I just laughed when you said yes and. Sorry.
You got a yes and it. One of my very smart friends once presented it to me in this way, where he was like, the fact that there's more stars, more like celestial bodies in the universe than there are grains of sand on every beach in the world combined means, of course, there's got to be there has to be other life out there.
Just mathematically, if we were literally the only planet that had any sort of complex life on it, that seems impossible.
Oh, but it's also hilariously human. Like, of course we think, but you know what
I
mean?
Like, it's like, of course, such we're like the only ones.
Yeah, and like USA, you know, right? We're all every alien is America. Yeah.
Well, it's kind of a religious thing too, which is like, if we were the one thing that was made in God's image, maybe we really are like the only planet of the entire universe, and this whole thing was made for us. You know,
made for us, and like we'll never ever get there.
Well, if you know, people thought the sun revolved around the Earth.
That's true.
People thought we were the center of everything, and I think that kind of still holds in a lot.
Other aliens may be like our world may be the Truman Show, and we may be entertaining just like billions. Think about that, billions of aliens. I also think that aliens. That it's another like human thing where we always think like aliens kind of look like us.
Right.
Like always. That's the hilarious thing. Like, they're always anthropomorphized.
It's always like a little bit shorter than us and kind of green with big eyes.
Yeah.
Big
like, yeah. Or like their heads style. Like a little bit long. Like their digits are a little longer than ours and their heads are a little longer. But that'll probably happen to us anyway.
But they're still bipedal. And not only that, they're still like carbon based and visible in the same light spectrum. We can see things.
They have mouths. They usually have two eyes.
Yeah. Always.
It's very convenient.
Uh-huh.
And they speak in sound waves that we can hear. It's always like we can interact with them. But probably if there is, and I agree with you, if there is some sort of alien life form out there, it's probably something we couldn't even like interact with.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
they're probably on our skin already. You know what I mean? They're like microbial. Yeah.
Right. Or maybe to them, like 1 second is a billion years. And they're just kind of like constantly zipping in and out of existence. And we just can't see them that it's happening.
We have no idea.
Yeah.
Except the mystery.
Exactly, Josh.
You're so with our theme. I love it.
Yeah, I'm in it. I'm in the pocket.
I don't know. Jackie, do you believe in aliens?
Yeah, I totally do. Yeah. But I'm curious too, because I think statistically there have to be aliens. It would make no sense to me that we'd be the only ones. But I'm also curious, like, it's possible they do look like us. So
you can't rule it out. It's possible.
I have no idea. I mean, obviously none of us have any idea, and
a different possibly related question. Do you think aliens have ever come to Earth and like abducted people and given them anal probes?
You know what? I think so. I mean, I don't know. There's like a lot of interesting documentaries about it. And since I'm not myself like a science person, it would be hard for me to say if something scientifically really does make sense or not. Right. But I mean, some of those theories make sense, or like, I don't know if people are crazy or not. You can't really tell, but I don't see like what would stop that from happening. To me, it doesn't make sense that aliens, like if they exist, wouldn't come to Earth.
But why would
I don't know.
But why would they come down and just like eviscerate some cows and then abduct a couple people and like give them anal probes?
Yeah,
and
why?
Then
why
put them back on Earth?
Why are aliens so into the butt stuff?
I don't. It's, what's that about? It always
aliens
seems like
you never know.
Yeah,
they love the butt.
They like butt play.
Yeah,
that's sort of thing.
It's even. I mean, it's alluded to. I think butt play is alluded to in The Man Who Wasn't
There.
Is
it really?
I think. Alien butt play, I think.
Oh, it is. You're right. It is. Know, when, it kind of is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is it?
I think that
was like Big Dave's big trauma. Kind of. There's maybe.
Oh,
like he was,
yeah. So I was sick when I was watching it, but yeah, okay.
When she comes up,
things are gonna
said he was abducted, and then he never touched her again.
Yeah, he never wanted to make love after that.
So
probably because
they
he was
him.
Horribly violated.
She might have even said they probed him. I mean, she didn't say. She doesn't say from behind or anything. But I definitely feel like I was like alluded to.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't know if it's like specifically that, but I would say like if aliens have the ability to come to Earth and look at people and abduct them and study them, I don't know why they wouldn't
go for the butt.
Well, just go for anything.
Oh, gotcha. I don't understand why they wouldn't look in our butts.
Right. Yeah. No, but I mean,
it's
like,
the most interesting part.
The most mysterious part of us.
Yeah. No, but I haven't seen any compelling reason why there wouldn't be aliens and why they wouldn't come to Earth. I know that's like the opposite of how you would argue stuff usually, but it doesn't make sense to me that we'd be the only human-like life form. and that's it.
That's, well, that's the thing.
Or even advanced life forms.
I think there probably, I posit there are advanced life forms out there. I think there might even be humanoid life forms. I think the chances that they've gone to Earth, but nobody knows except like a couple crazy people, is really unlikely.
But I don't think it's just a couple crazy people. I'm like, when the people who like do the documentaries about this and stuff, like there's so many.
Oh yeah, the ancient aliens people. That's
just for sure. Yeah, real. People say like, no, I know what you're talking about. There's like a place up near like, or maybe it's in Big Sur, where like so many people have sworn they've seen, which almost makes me think that it's not. That makes me think it's like a Northern Lights kind of phenomenon that everyone's like, oh, it's at this specific place.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's so many people that have say they've seen.
Yeah, a lot of people have said it, and apparently like a lot of governments kind of do too, but I'm very like conspiracy theory-esque, so.
And I'm not. They tend to just be really skeptical. I'm like, no, there's no Roswell, there's no
Area 51. But I'm skeptical of everything, so that's why sometimes I'm like, I don't know, I don't see a reason why that wouldn't happen, so.
All right, so Ed Crane is a barber. He's the man who cuts the hair.
Mm-hmm.
Josh, have you ever gotten a haircut.
Sorry.
You have to let me finish that question.
Guilty.
Have you ever gotten either a haircut so bad you felt compelled to immediately get a new one, or a haircut so good you felt like you were a completely different person?
Oh, wow. I don't know if I've ever gotten one so bad. Although I did do a mohawk once, but then then I purposely just buzzed it a week later. This was years ago when I did my birthright, the free trip for Jews to Israel.
Oh yeah,
and so
which I could have gone on and I passed on.
It's ridiculous.
I'm no longer qualified for it.
There's tons of Israel America relations are.
They want you. They'll get you over there.
If anybody wants to go, and you do, or you say you have a shred of Jewish blood in you, they'll get
you know, I do hear from everybody who went that that's fun. It's a great time.
Oh, it was great. But I got a mohawk just for fun before. And I went in and out of New York. So I went to New York like a week early to like see friends and show them my mohawk.
Mm-hmm.
And then I decided that before I went to the Middle East, I should just do a buzz cut. Because I was like, I don't know if I want to draw too much attention to myself. You know what I mean? I was sort of paranoid that like, shoot the one with the mohawk. You know, that like, I make me a target. It wouldn't have mattered.
But then if you totally buzz that off, then you're like a skinhead in Israel.
I know. Then I was, I looked like, I just didn't shave while I was traveling, you know, and like shortly before, because it's like, why?
Mm-hmm.
What's the point? You know what I mean? I'm not going in for a business guy audition. I don't need to be clean shaven while I'm hopping around the Middle East. So when I came back, I had like really short hair and then like kind of like a bushy beard.
Yeah.
So I just looked like a yeshiva student. Yeah. Like everybody would have thought like,
everyone's like, oh, so you're moving back and like making all
Jewish. I was like, that's it. That's it.
That's awesome. I don't know. I'm a person who always gets really insecure about haircuts. Like every time I get a haircut, it's a different style.
Oh, do you have a guy or do you just go to like?
I definitely don't have a guy.
Oh, yeah,
or a girl.
You know what? I have a girl for you.
You got to get.
Do you really?
You got to get a usual.
I just go to Floyd's barbershop.
No.
And before that, I'd go to Supercuts.
No, you got to stay away from Supercuts.
All right, I'm gonna get you a girl.
I would get some traumatically bad haircuts, so that it feel like I just want to like wear a hat for weeks.
Yeah, that's why. Like years ago, I hit that. I would go to Supercuts or whatever, and then I started finding a guy who was at he's moved around, but I met him at Rudy's.
Yeah,
like kind of like a Floyd's barbershop.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I remember like my girlfriend at the time took me there, and I was like, what? Like $30 for a hair? I was like, come on, this. But then it's like you never. It's worth paying like twice as much as a Supercuts.
Yeah.
When you know so you like you're never going to have the trauma of like, oh my God.
Yeah.
You're right. You know what? You're right. Maybe I am enough of an adult that I can just spend a little bit more on a haircut.
It's worth it.
I have a great person.
Like, because it's like even like not the worst haircut ever, but like a mildly bad haircut. It takes like that's like a week, maybe 2 weeks
maybe
where it's got to grow in, you know?
Yeah.
So if you think about it, like, it's $15 worth never having a week to 2 weeks of shame.
You're right.
Would you pay $1 a day?
You're right.
To not be ashamed of your haircut.
You're right. I'm gonna change my ways. I'm gonna get like a person who I trust.
Find a guy.
I have a person. I got a girl for you.
Yeah. Hook me up.
She's got a girl.
Great.
I'm just gonna assume, Jackie, that your hair is always perfect and you never had a bad haircut.
I cut my own hair to avoid the trauma of people ruining my friggin' hair. No, but I've been traumatized by haircuts at Supercuts, and then I stopped doing that, and I have a guy who's in Beverly Hills, but it's, you know, they're very expensive because women's hair
is very expensive.
Yeah, women's hair is very expensive. And then I also realized I'm better at cutting my hair, at least the bangs, because my bangs grow really quickly. So I cut them myself like all the time. And then I just kind of trim my hair. So I cut my own hair most of the time. And like maybe once a year, I'll get a haircut.
But isn't it hard to cut the back of your hair and make it all like even?
No, you just like bring it to the front and cut it.
I guess you could,
I think it's a long hair.
I guess you could do that.
Long
hair. Yeah. If I was a guy, like a long I'd be bald. Thing. Like I don't know how to do it. But women's hair is easy enough to cut if you learn how to do it. But I did get color done recently by the girl that I'm going to refer you to.
Is that ombre? Is that technically?
Yes, this is ombre. Oh my god, Josh, that was amazing. Yeah, wow. I think somebody said that on Friday, right? Are you trying to queue up a soundboard right
Case
now?
Case dismissed.
Great. Yeah. Great. I knew. You have that soundboard look in your eyes right now.
I was ready for it.
We have a soundboard with me.
I love it.
But yeah, no, she's great. So don't be traumatized. And I will also add to that, speaking of color, once I dyed my hair black and then I was like 17 years old and I came out crying because I like missed a patch, but also because it like looked so stark. So hair can be a very dramatic thing.
Oh, have I ever told you about my one experiment with hair dyeing?
No.
Oh. Okay. This was high school. This was when I was still like figuring my shit out. I had no idea what I was doing. It might have even been like ninth grade. Mm-hmm. I thought it would be cool to get like a racing stripe down the middle of my head.
Wait, like that sounds familiar.
Oh my gosh.
Like, yeah,
like,
so,
like a skunk stripe? Just
that's the thing. I thought it was a racing stripe, but then I went to school and everybody thought it was a skunk stripe.
Was it blonde? So it was like a bleach?
Yeah, no, there was like a blonde stripe and then like another thin stripe of color down the center of the blonde stripe.
Oh, so it was kind of, I see, like a racing stripe.
Like a racing
stripe. But it looks stripe. Like two skunk stripes.
Yeah, so I got I briefly got the nickname Skunk after that.
Oh.
And that's not a good nickname to have.
No, not, oh man, not in ninth grade.
Really not in ninth grade.
You could do that as like a senior in high school and you're just like, I'm cool.
Yeah, if I shave it into mohawk too, so you're like, whatever.
If I was a stoner back then and people wanted to call me Skunk, that would have a totally different meaning. It would be cool.
Oh yeah.
But I was not a stoner. So it just
you could have started smoking. Like, that could have been. You got that.
That could have been a reason to smoke weed and be like, yeah,
no guys, joke's on you.
All right, both Doris and Ed Crane end up dying in prison by the end of this film. Have you ever thought about how you would handle life in prison if, for some reason, you found yourself facing like a 4 or 5 year prison sentence?
I have, and I've realized that I would not do well. Like, I just think that, you know, really on any level where it's like, I don't, if you think about any of the like pros and cons, pun intended, like, you know, people are like, oh, you're prison. Oh, you mean you're going to work out all the time.
Right,
it's like,
right.
Well, I don't put on muscle that fast. You know what I mean? I'm just sort of like skinny. So it's like, I'm never going to get a prison body.
Well, a prison body?
I'm never going to be a tough guy. I'm never going to be like, I'm never going to be like an enforcer at a prison gig.
Yeah.
I would have to find some other sort of role.
Yeah. I'm not Aryan. You know what I mean? Like, I look white, but I'm not Aryan. You know what I mean? Like, the white guys won't want me.
Right.
I'm not like my ethnicity. Like, there's no gang I could join.
There is no cool Jewish prison gang.
No, I don't think so. I would definitely.
You would have to try to be a white guy, though.
I'm a white guy, but I don't have any tattoos. Like, I thought about this. The first time I thought about this was when I used to teach SAT classes. I went to like this.
I used to teach SAT classes.
Oh, cool!
So
I used to go, and I would have to like pitch it to these kind of like inner city, just like or underfunded schools. And I went to this one classroom. I remember this specifically, and it was a sub because I could tell, and she had like no idea what she was doing. And she's like, "Oh yeah, no problem. I'll just stop the video, you know, that kind of thing."
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm like talking to these kids, and this like Mexican kid in the front row. As I'm talking to the class, like, "Hey guys, my name's Josh. I'm here from this company. We're gonna have like a, you know, I'm projecting to the whole room, talking to the back of the room." And there's a kid in this front row. Who's like, "Hey," while I'm talking, "Hey man. So my name's Josh. We're gonna have these classes. Hey." And if you want to sign up, amen. And then finally, I was like, "Yeah, hey, what's up, buddy?" And he's like, I like your tat. I was like, I'm sorry, what? And he's like, and he like points around his eyes. And I'm so confused. And the sub says to me, oh, he thinks you have a tattoo. And so this kid thought that my like Eastern European freckly, like three like moles.
Where?
Right here, right?
Okay,
or is
it
this side?
But they're not that dark.
No, they're not that dark, but he thought I had like teardrops.
Those are like teardrops?
But they're like,
so you murdered three people?
I'm just trying to announce
that. They're so tiny.
They're speckled.
But like that's why these kids need all the academic help they can, because they're clearly not that bright. But I was like, this kid thinks, to him, I come off as a guy who killed three people.
Holy.
But, and that's what made me think about, like, way back then, like 10 years ago, I was like, Nah, man, I would never. Maybe, but it'd be like an accident. You know what I mean?
You could have exploited that, like the gun full dangerous.
Wait, to have
mines.
A tattoo?
No, to kill someone. Like, oh. In prison, like, it'd be an accident. Like, someone would be strangling me. Someone would be raping me on the bunk, and I would somehow, because I have long limbs, like, somehow I'd be able to be, like push them off, and they would fall off the
look
bunk.
Look at these freckles. Don't
hit their head. You know what I mean? To be a total. That's my only hope in prison, is that, like, I did sort of like a. What's that one? The you know, the tailor who's like. 7 in one stroke, and everyone thought, like, the, you know what I mean, the giant killer, Jack the Giant Killer, like the original myth where he's like,
oh yeah,
he
yeah,
killed
yeah,
three
yeah.
flies or whatever, and everyone thought he was talking about giants.
I only wait now. Now I actually don't know. What
that's like,
about.
And there's like a Mickey Mouse version of it where he's like, oh, 7 in 1. Like,
are you talking
I
about
killed...
Jack and the Beanstalk?
It's not Jack and the. Well, they mix them together, but
I
it
don't
is
know this.
So it's like the myth where he's going around town saying either 7 or 3 in 1 stroke, but he's talking about killing flies, mm-hmm. and everyone thinks that he's talking about killing. He's like, okay. Oh, they were giant,
right?
So that would be me. Like people thing, are like people right. are like, oh man, you fucking killed Big Ed, and I was like. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's a good thing to let people think about you. And and I can see how that would work to your advantage as a teacher, too, if you want to go full Dangerous Minds and be like, yo, I'm from the streets. I got to tell you that.
I got to tell you.
SAT, pretty fucking cool, bro.
Yeah, man, get out of here. That'd be the other thing, too, even in prison. Like, I thought, oh, as an academic, maybe I could, like, teach these people, but obviously there's someone else who's already teaching. You know what I mean? Mm. So, like, what am I going to do? Shiv the other teacher? Like, there's no place for me in prison.
I know.
I have thought about this too, because I also don't know. I'm not going to be the tough guy. I think maybe I just end up being like the funny guy in the gang. I think every gang needs a funny
guy.
Sorry,
that guy gets anally probed. I'm just telling you, man.
How's this for funny, homie?
I just don't think. I think, and I've watched Lock Up too. Yeah, it's like there's you know,
I mean,
right?
There's people they make wives
or
find a wife
or
find
a prison wife. You're gonna be.
They don't need.
Wife,
they don't
sure.
need fucking just, comic
yeah.
relief.
Yeah,
they, just one guy who's
funny enough.
One guy who's gonna be gentle about the anal sex. That's so. I guess that's the best I can hope for.
That's all you can hope for.
That'll be your prison movie.
That's all you can hope for.
Do you guys not watch Orange Is the New Black? But I guess that's just
this is what I was
going
to ask you, Jackie.
I do.
If a full Orange Is the New Black situation happened, what do you
think? Yeah, no, I think about it now. I think about it all the time after seeing that show. And I don't know. I feel like I've learned a lot from watching her, how mm-hmm. I would have to like bone up, because I also am not a naturally like prison type of chick. I'm like not, I don't know. I'm not going to like kill somebody in prison, but right. I might like... The way that she almost killed that girl, I could see it happening to me too. I don't know. I feel like there's something about being in prison that could bring out that side of you. Like, I get it now. Also, I have brothers, and like I kind of beat on my brothers when I was little, so maybe those instincts will like come back. And
I could see you. I could see you having a killer instinct if you were backed against a wall.
I could see it too. I mean, I'm like a really calm, chill person, but you know, I'm not to be messed with. Ugh, I hate movies. That's why I would kill people. I don't know. It's weird.
They
I feel
make
like when
you
you're...
watch a lot of movies in prison. Yeah, they have that movie.
And also,
I hate movies.
You don't fuck with me. Yeah, but I just think after watching that, it kind of makes me think like, I think if you're in prison, a different side of you would come out. So like normal day-to-day Jackie is not surviving in prison, but once I go to prison, it's different.
Oh yeah.
So I can see it. And I would be that character.
I could
plus
be-
I've been talking about character work a lot, so I'd have to take on like a new character.
Right.
That's chick.
Yeah. You just think about it like an acting exercise.
That's what I would do.
Yeah.
I would, I think
you
I would
immerse yourself in the role.
Yeah. A little bit of method acting. Yeah.
Yo, I'm JLZ.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm here to represent.
JLZ, which is what one of my friends calls me, like JLZ.
JLZ. Oh, that's perfect for somebody in jail. You're JLZ.
That's right.
Yeah.
So I think I'd survive. I've got the name. Yeah. First step down.
Like, should we get to the movie?
Yeah.
Let's
yeah,
movie. Get into it. A segment we call the Big Review Ski. The Man Who Wasn't There, starring Billy Bob Thornton, Frances McDormand, bunch of Coen regulars, Tony Shalhoub, John Polito, great cast, pretty stacked
mm-hmm.
cast.
Mm-hmm.
Scarlett Johansson.
Scarlett Johansson in one of her
very
first roles, very first mm-hmm. roles on mm-hmm. film. This is the first time I've seen this movie in like over a decade. This is not a Coen Brothers movie I caught up with recently, so it was really interesting to come back to this way after the fact. This is a real slow burner. Immediately after watching this movie for the first time in about a decade, my initial response was, man, what a snooze fest. And then I spent the next 3 hours and I couldn't stop thinking about it.
It does. It sticks with you.
It's a
right?
movie.
It is a movie that kind of sticks in your head.
I feel like this is really a movie that sticks with you. There's an interesting central character and there's really interesting themes. And even though it moves at its own pace and it does move at kind of a leisurely pace, I think those pauses and really kind of let the characters simmer and the themes develop and then you do find yourself thinking about it afterwards. It's a really strange one.
It is kind of strange, but it's beautiful. Like, it's very stylized, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like, they really, like, nail the... Because I was thinking about it when I was watching it again. It's in black and white, you know, it takes place in... God, what is it? 50...
50 it's... 52, it, 54? I don't know if, I don't know if
I think
they make it explicit.
40s, based on the cars.
I think it is the 40s.
But it's shortly after, because he's talking, right, because they were talking about, like, or it'd be like late 40s, right?
Yeah.
They're talking about the war.
They were talking
about
the
Nagasaki.
War that it ended, for sure.
So maybe it's like, yeah, late 40s.
And I know, and it's around the time of Roswell, which I know is, I believe, late 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. And I know that the inspiration for this film was, while the Coen brothers were working on Hudsucker Proxy, they saw a poster. It was just like a poster of men's haircuts from the 40s. And basically, they said, let's make a movie based on that.
Oh, about a barber.
Yeah.
Oh,
let's make a barber from the 40s. And that was kind of the initial seed that led to this film.
Hmm.
So I'm pretty sure 40s is the right time period here.
Yeah. But they styled it right, by the way.
Yeah. No, it's, I mean...
Which is my main complaint on a lot of their sets. Sorry to interrupt you, but
no.
Yeah, the 40s
that's
are
so
right.
Unrealistic.
Mm-hmm. That's a Jackie classic. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, wait, is it... I'm just, as we're talking about it, Jackie, are we... Is it up to, like, the guest? And are we trying to convince you to like this movie?
No.
Or anything? You know what I'm saying?
No,
I'm just saying that, like...
Because of the soundboard, it's, like, confusing
that's
people.
That's what I'm wondering. I'm just like, are we just going to bat it around? Or is, like, the end result, like, are we trying
you
to
know
get
what?
The premise of this whole podcast is to
admit that
like
she
it.
Loves
you
one.
Know what? I
so
did
funny.
A couple weeks ago, I did spend a lot of time trying to convince her that The Big Lebowski was a great movie.
That is so funny. This
that
is
took
great.
Some time. This one, I don't feel like I'm going to have to convince you as much.
No,
oh, wait,
I liked
so
it.
So that one was probably recent, right?
That was
now we're in 2001. So
that was recent.
Yeah, that was a recent one. Yeah, this one, it's
oh my God,
I remember when I first saw this movie, I think I saw it in theaters, and I really liked it too. I was like, oh, this is so cool, because it was very different. I'm also, I guess I could have looked at like what else was coming out in 2001, but I just remember seeing it. It was so different than all the stuff that was out there. When I watched it again, though, Josh, I, Josh, as well.
Yes, Josh as well.
Felt like,
Josh
I was like, oh yeah, this is a slow, like it does, oh man, when Tony Shalhoub shows up, his first, oh God, it's so, his first two scenes are so amazing.
Tony Shalhoub is perfect.
He's so good. When he goes into the diner and he's like making the orders and like, oh my God, it's so, and he's explaining.
Great. And by the way, eating pancakes, which is a Coen Brothers motif.
Flapjacks.
Mm-hmm. Anymore. Yep,
he
flapjacks.
Wants those flapjacks.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's like,
great.
What does he say? Or he's like, I don't, you, nothing out of school. You don't talk about anything out of school. What's out of school? Everything.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I'm a lawyer. You're a barber. You don't know nothing.
Yeah, you know nothing.
You sure you don't want anything?
I wrote down.
You don't.
I wrote down a few choice Freddie Reed and Schneider lines.
Oh,
like,
man.
I don't litigate.
I capitulate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
I wrote that one down too. I litigate.
And all that third person reference.
Yeah.
I have Freddie Reed and Schneider. Hold your hand in a sentencing hearing.
Nah, he was perfect in Barton Fink, and he's perfect here. When you give him a role, he's spot on with that kind of like snappy period dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
He's really good.
Oh, he's so good. But after that, so like after the, and maybe even the first courtroom scene, maybe I'm mixing it up, but then it starts to like really kind of slow down until Frances McDormand's character, you find out that she killed herself.
Right.
And then it's kind of, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, there's
thing.
Moments where the plot spikes back up again, and then there's moments that really kind of seem to drift, and purposefully drift, where you just spend maybe a few minutes at a time listening to some mournful Beethoven sonata and watching Billy Bob Thornton cut hair and, I don't know, and sit and watch Scarlett Johansson
but
play
good
piano
shots
and,
of all those things.
All that. What does he say? He's like, you got to get the moves down.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get the moves down. And he's like, for the kids, and it's just like the montage of like...
Great shots. This was nominated for an Oscar for best cinematography.
It makes
total sense. Roger Deakins is brilliant, and it's and the black and white cinematography is beautiful. It's a little bit like Miller's Crossing. It's very classical. It's a very classically shot movie.
Yeah.
Lots of just lots of classic film grammar and lots of two shots and lots of close ups but it is gorgeous. So there's some gorgeous setups and some amazing lighting and everything looks crisp. This is as close to like just a pure film noir as they've ever done.
Yeah.
And it
was accurate too, though.
Well, yeah, and not just accurate to the time, but accurate to the kind of movies that were coming out around that time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
And like the scene where Billy Bob Thornton, Ed Crane, goes to see Big Dave,
yeah.
James Gandolfini.
Yeah.
And when I started rewatching it, this is like a side note, and I feel so guilty that I thought this, because I was like, I know he dies in this movie, but... And then in my head, I was like, oh my God, does he die of a heart attack in this movie? It's prophetic. You know what I mean? I started like merging, because I was like, yeah. I know he dies. I forget how he dies. And then when I rewatched it, obviously, right. See how, but it was just funny that it popped in my head. I was like, oh my God, he dies of a heart attack mm-hmm. in this film. He does not.
No, yeah.
But the shot when he goes late at night into mm-hmm. the office and the way it's lit and like mm-hmm. the shadows, like you just see James Gandolfini's mouth. James Gandolfini
perfectly sitting in shadow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's so great. And the long shadows like walking in where you see like the Nerdlingers sign on the inside.
What a great name for a department store.
Oh, it's
perfect.
Nerdlingers is so perfect.
I feel like that's what they called someone in Revenge of the Nerds.
Oh, right? Yeah. Totally. It sounds like a burn, but you're like, yeah, of course it'd be a burn. It's like a burn in the 80s, but in the 40s, it was like a wealth. You were the Waltons.
Right.
Yeah.
No, great shots. And speaking of Gandolfini also.
James Gandolfini.
First of all, I gasped when I saw him on screen because I haven't seen this before. And I didn't know
you didn't know he was in
it.
Yeah.
And I was so happy. Like, I literally gasped. This is the first time, by the way, that Josh and I have watched a movie separately because usually we watch them together.
Yeah, usually we get to watch these together, so I know a little bit what you're feeling about the movie.
Yeah, so Josh has no idea what I think.
This time I'm surprised. I don't know what you're going to say.
Yeah, it's all a surprise. But when I was watching and he comes on screen, I literally like gasped and go, because I love him so much. And then I like text Josh, oh my God, James Gandolfini, and like went back to watching. But
I know you're a big Sopranos fan.
Yeah. And then I, but one of my favorite shots from the beginning of that too, I loved when Ed is like talking about how he knows there's an affair and he's like standing out on the porch. But then there's like the shot where, what's his name in the movie? Oh, Big Dave. He like comes out and like grabs him on the neck.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That was like, it was so good.
Yeah, just puts his hand right on the back.
But it was like
neck.
Very shocking and it was so perfect. Cause then of course later the big old fight. So I noticed when it happened, I thought that was great.
But it's foreshadowing to that fight.
Oh, and, the knife.
And the way they focus on the knife, and it's clearly, it's like the same Chekhov's letter opener that's going to come back. And
Same spot. I don't know. But yeah, it was great. So I love that shot.
And that's just classic visual film storytelling. That's a huge part of why this movie works as well as it does.
Yeah.
Everything is laid out really pretty perfectly. All the relationships are clear within the first 10 minutes of the movie. Mm-hmm. The Coen brothers don't waste time. They don't fuck around. You immediately get a sense of who this central character, Ed Crane, is, what his relationship with his wife is like, what he thinks of his job, and why he might be compelled to blackmail this person.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's such a great... That's to me, I think that's like the one of my favorite parts about this movie, where you're like, you're meeting this guy and you're like, okay, he's boring. He doesn't like his life.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like the premise of like, if you could come up with anything as to like how a normal person's life is then going to unravel
mm-hmm.
and like their wife is going to go to jail and kill themselves. They're going to murder somebody. They're going to get the electric chair.
Yeah.
And to say like, it happened all because he wanted to get into dry cleaning.
Yeah.
It's like, right? It's like such a fucking great premise to be like, oh yeah, dry cleaning. And then he's like, yeah, all right, blackmail Big Dave.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
He wasn't like, going to really act on it until the dry cleaning came up because he was like, it's a free country. And it like didn't really bother him that much.
Yeah, he didn't even care. He didn't even care. And then he was like,
fuck it.
Huh. Dry cleaning. Like, that's...
I guess I have a way to get some money.
What's stuck in his brain is so funny.
It's so mundane, but the reason it stands out is because you get a sense of how this guy has just essentially drifted through his life for the last, I don't know, 40, 50, however many years. He married a woman basically after 2 weeks for no good reason.
Right. Just she's like, said, you don't talk much, and he's like, let's get married. And he said, should we get to know each other better? And then she said, why does it get... Does it get better?
Right.
Yeah, no, but this is like as well as we're going to know each other or something. Yeah. And then he said that was still true, which was so great.
Yeah. And then, you know, it's established he kind of became a barber because I guess the barber was, I think, like a family business, right?
Yeah, her brother. Yeah. His brother-in-law
runs it.
Their parents, right? Her dad
started it.
Yeah. Because he talks about that when they hire Freddie Riedenschneider.
Right.
They got to go into the bank.
So he drifted into this job, he drifted into this marriage, and now he's just kind of been just passively accepting everything that's come at him through life. which is again a major Coen Brothers protag theme, one that we saw a little bit in The Big Lebowski, who's another very passive character who just kind of accepts things that come at him.
Oh yeah, and it's all like inner monologue. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
narrated.
Yeah.
Like such an interesting, and that I remember reading like an interview or maybe some one of my like actor friends was telling me that, about it, but it was. Talking to Billy Bob Thornton about it, like, oh yeah, how'd you play that character? Like, you're just like the observer. What are you thinking about? Like, it's so great. And in the interview, he says, like, oh, I don't, you know, he's like, I don't know. It's just, you know, it's the film. It's like they're doing the job. So he's like, I don't know. I would look and I'd be like, oh, that guy's got really nice shoes. Like, he was like, right. You know what I mean? So it's all these like great shots of him. But Billy Bob Thornton admitted that he's just like staring at whatever, knowing that. The like Coen that. Brothers are going to take care of it, and then he'll do... Yeah, he's got his...
And then he said, would you ask Tom Petty that question?
And then he drank a little vial of Angelina Jolie's blood. And I actually think when I was watching it, and I remember that quote about watching shoes, the moment when the two cops come to the barber shop.
Yep. By the way, double cops, once again, a Coen Brothers motif.
That makes sense. Yeah. And like everything in this movie... I guess this is also you'll let me know if this is a Coen Brothers thing. It's like all the like setups are like the duplications of right, like you see the letter opener and then there's that scene where he's shaving Francis McDormand's legs.
Yep.
And then in the last scene of the movie, like the guy's shaving his leg and you see the same dirty water.
It's perfectly cyclical.
Yeah, the two cops keep coming back, but those two cops when they pull him out of the barbershop and they're like, come with us, and he's like, Yeah, okay. And he thinks that like they got him. And then there's a moment when, like, after they tell him, he's just looking down. And I thought to myself, that's when he's looking at that guy's shoes.
Oh, I'm opening nice it up,
and I was like, oh, my God, he looks so pensive. But I'm like, I bet that's the moment where he's just staring at the cop's shoes. The he's just like, yeah, but it's such a great moment because you're like,
I mean, I guess if you want to get in the head of a really blank guy, you just play it blankly. Like, oh, here's some things in my environment. Look, it's shoes. Look, it's a wall, you know?
Yeah.
It's...
But I think he's a little bit more zen than blank. That's the thing. Like, he's boring.
I don't know.
No, I'm kind of... He's one of those guys where it's like the idiot, where it's like people confess stuff to him. Mm-hmm. Like, if you notice in the movie, everybody's telling him things. I know,
people are constantly coming to him, confessing secrets or coming on to him or just like kind of... using him as this blank slate that they can project their troubles on.
I don't think that he was blank as in dumb, though. I just think he had a weird approach that most of us wouldn't have.
I don't think...
I
don't want to say dumb either. I don't think he's dumb.
He wasn't there. He wasn't there.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Yeah, but that's to other people he wasn't there. He was like, other people don't see me. Like, I'm... You know, he felt invisible, but... I think he had like a somewhat like different meaning. Like, I think in the very beginning when he's talking about his situation with his wife, it was like... I mean, if I were him and I was a dude and I knew that was happening, I would never react the way he did. Like, that wouldn't be me. But there was like a very zen approach to him just sort of being like, you know, I know this is a situation, but like, it's a free country. And like, he sort of like wasn't going to fight that and try to make somebody be somebody they're not too.
But then the next day he blackmails that guy for $10,000.
But he didn't do that because he cares about his wife. He did that because he was trying to get some money to do the dry cleaning.
Also, you could even debate, is anything he tells us even true? You know what I mean? Like,
right. There's a very classic unreliable narrator thing going on. He could be
like much more sinister, because then we learn at the end that all this narration, like, I love the way it ties up, but you're like, all this narration is him writing a story for a men's magazine.
He's telling his story for a mass audience. So in a way, he's cleaning up a story a bit.
I mean, I take it at face value, but there's that possibility.
No, I don't necessarily think he's lying either, but I also feel like, you know, this is the guy... it all comes together beautifully, and possibly my favorite part of the movie is actually the last 5 or 10 minutes, where it just all really comes together nicely. But when he talks about how when you're in life, you're constantly butting against the walls of the maze and you're butting against dead ends. But when you actually know, okay, this is the day I'm going to die, and you're looking back on your life, you can kind of pull back from it and you can see the shape of things, and it all seems to make sense, which I think is kind of a beautiful sentiment.
Yeah. Well, okay, so that ties into also why I don't think he's as blank or boring as he could be perceived as, is because of that. Because it's funny, because recently in life, one of my friends was telling me that I'm like a salmon. Like, I keep like swimming upstream.
You're a salmon.
Yeah. And he's like, you got to like relax a little bit. Like, because you keep like swimming upstream. Like, it's like too much struggle on certain things that you just kind of like go with the flow. So I think I'm paying attention to going with the flow more, like, as a motif or theme. So when I see that and I see him just kind of being like, well, she's cheating on me, but you know, it is what it is, and like, things are happening, and he's just sort of like, all right, well, you know, the two cops are here to put me away, but then they're not. Like, it's weird how things unravel when you're not fighting them either. And I just thought that was really interesting to see. So I kind of like that theme.
You talk about Zen. So I'm going to bring up the Buddhist. I'll bring up the Buddhist angle on this film.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Which is that Buddhism, and also especially in Taoism, you're really kind of supposed to let life wash over you.
Yeah.
And just be existent and be in the world.
That's what
and,
he's doing.
And also rid yourself of all desire. Most of the time,
so
that is...
So he is the Buddha figure.
For the most part, except there are two moments in the film where he seems to give in to desire and seems to be like, okay, I'm not content with my life the way it is. I want a little bit more.
I want that dry cleaning.
I maybe want to get out of this straitjacket. And one of those moments is where he's like, okay, I'm going to try to get myself involved in this dry cleaning business. And the other one of those moments is when he decides to take Birdie to that that piano teacher.
Right.
Thinking,
such a great.
Yeah, I'm gonna I'm gonna make you a big music star.
She hits the notes nice. Yeah. She touch very nice.
She's gonna be a great typist
type,
one
type,
day.
Type, yep. type.
So funny.
That was amazing.
But you could tell. I think he had kind of plans of being like this. I don't know, like this Colonel Parker figure to her Elvis Presley, and being like, this is my ticket to stardom.
But then it's also kind of like a clue that it's like, oh, maybe he's more of a dope. You know what I mean?
That's where he's true. Like, yeah. I was like, oh, you're
like,
an idiot.
Oh, he's just like listening to like someone play. It's not Moonlight Sonata, is it?
No, it's Beethoven.
It is a lot of Beethoven.
Right.
It's Beethoven, yeah.
It's like just like someone, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like basically like a very talented like eighth grader playing the piano.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, she's real good.
She's so good, yes.
Well, it's because he's in love with her, not her piano. Playing.
Well, that's so a whole different piano. That's a whole different story.
But then that's the whole. I know that this would have happened anyway, but it's so funny where it's like. When he gets in the car crash, because she's trying to give him roadhead, and he says no, and then goes in the car crash, heavens to Betsy, like that's the one moment where it's like when that happened, and I remembered it, and I was watching it, I was like, oh man, here we go, Coen Brothers, like here's like you guys just can't like keep your fucking hands off your own movies, like you have to do like a winky wink, where it's like. Heavens to Betsy, Birdie. Oh, and then we see the car like fly. Like,
yeah,
it's like
a like,
shot of palm trees. And then the car just flying by like a cartoon.
I loved that moment.
I liked the hubcap. I thought the hubcap was cool, and then it like goes into the
flying saucer. I love when the car spins out of control and then the entire camera spins for a moment.
So
and
cheesy.
Then it does cut to that still shot and then the car sails past. That was beautiful. It was cartoonish.
It's super cartoon. And I was like, oh, you guys. I felt like that belonged in the Big Lebowski or something. But then it hit me where I was this is what they do. Like,
maybe that's
they get you like it, for me because we won't talk about other movies because this is
we can talk about other movies.
But like sometimes
just not anything that happened after this because I haven't seen it yet.
Sometimes the things with like the cone where you're just like, why do you like either like just wrap it up nicely or like make an ending. Like sometimes I wonder if they even like this one at least end like when it finally ended, like you're saying there's that message where he's like, mm-hmm.
This one has
you
a real
what's going to happen. And then, and then it's over. Right. And then like the narration ends like it's done. But like up before that, it's just funny that you were like the last 5-10 minutes. Cause all the stuff that's happening before that, I'm kind of like, oh, this is weird. Like from the car crash, and it's just sort of just like piling on,
like so much hair that just keeps growing and growing and doesn't stop.
Well, but because what's so cool about this movie is the first, let's say, like 75%, maybe even more, where it's like this slow burn and all these things happen and you think like he goes and he's just willing to do whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Like James Gandolfini calls him and is like, yeah, come to my place, and you're like, don't go.
That's true.
Like,
James Gandolfini, you're just like, but sorry,
you're just like, don't. Yeah, he was at his like rattiest in this movie, like big day, like you know what I mean, like just all talking through his nose. But he's like calls him at like 1 a.m. or whatever, and as an audience member, I'm thinking, what do you do? Don't go.
Yeah.
Say, I don't know, Dave. It's late. I'm not gonna. You know what I mean? But you go. Yeah. And there's like so much danger, and you're like, fuck. And then somehow he gets out. You know. Somehow he grabs a knife, kills him.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, well, this isn't good. And you know that he just walks out of the store. Like, he's not wiping down fingerprints.
No.
Granted, there's no forensic. Like, clearly, there's no CSI team.
That's what I was going to do. I was like, he left his fingerprints on the knife. But I'm but where are his fingerprints? Like, no one's going to find them, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, later, he doesn't really particularly care about, like, confessing to his lawyer that he murdered the guy. Or really keeping anything under wraps. Like, he just says stuff.
But that's, like, all part of the great build where it's like, Oh my God. And they grabbed his wife, and then he's in, the, and he goes, I did it. Oh shit. Is it going to twit? And it just never.
Like, he's like, that's not a good story. We're not going to use it.
Yeah. Like you think it's going one way and then it doesn't happen. And then once like the car crash with Birdie happens, then it's just like a pile on his character.
Yeah.
And it's like interesting where they go, oh, you're under arrest for killing, what's it? Creighton Tolliver.
Yeah.
Pansy.
Yep.
So funny. But like, then it's like, you're like, oh wow. But then it just kind of just goes, right? Like, it feels like it just kind of goes straight through.
And then it, basically follows this to its logical conclusion, which is the electric chair. But that's what's interesting. And this is to finish my point about the Buddhist angle on the film, is that he's mostly this very Zen guy, but he has these two moments where that seem to, where he gives into desire, which he, which he shouldn't be feeling. And those are the two moments that are the sparks that lead to this chain of events that eventually leads to his downfall and his death.
Mm. If the car crash hadn't have happened,
right,
would they have found Creighton Tolliver?
Maybe not. Maybe not. We don't know. And or, and if he hadn't ever invested that dry cleaning thing in the first place, none of this would have happened.
That's true. Yeah.
Right.
Right. Everything.
Yeah.
And everything that happens is completely disproportionate to that initial crime. He doesn't deserve to die for basically trying to extort this guy.
Right.
Yeah, but then he did kill him.
But that was self-defense. Yeah. I think that was
big time.
That was a purely reactive move, and I think totally justifiable.
Yeah,
that's true.
Such like a creepy death scene too. Like it's like
you've ruled officially.
I've innocent. Ruled.
Isn't the sounds of James Gandolfini dying in this? Isn't it like
so gurgly?
It's so gurgly and gross. And it's
I was so glad that it was in black and white because another thing about it is, I hate violence in movies. Like, it's the worst.
If that had been red and spurting out of your eyes, would have been covered.
That was a Dexter, a scene from Dexter.
It would have been like my hand out watching. I don't watch Dexter. I can't. But, oh, yeah, that was really good.
Yeah,
it was really good.
It was so good.
Perfectly drawn out.
Who's that actor that plays Creighton Tolliver?
John Polito.
Oh, my favorite guy.
I love John Polito.
He's so good.
Every time he shows up.
I love that he did it was open mouth John Polito again. Because what was it? In Barton Fink, he was like mousy John Polito. But otherwise, he keeps playing the same like fish face version of himself. Like, like his mouth is always open.
No, he's hilarious. When he's coming on to Ed, like just legs up on the bed, arms spread out.
So funny. And then,
super funny.
And it's so funny, too, because like, then there's that stretch where Billy Bob Thornton thinks that he's been swindled.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, Big Dave killed him.
Right.
So like, if he had not defended himself, Big Dave would have killed two people. In this small town, Santa Rosa,
California, Big Dave,
and then, he would have killed two people and gotten away with it.
Big Dave isn't really supposed to be a good guy. You hear about how he has his demons.
Yeah,
a big running theme through this movie is secrets and the fact that everybody seems to have a secret.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you know, Big Dave, which not only has, I think they mentioned some secrets about the war, but also obviously this alien abduction stuff going on. and
so weird.
And also that Frances McDormand is carrying on an affair with Big Dave.
Yeah,
and people do keep going in with this problem. So even the coroner feels compelled to go to him after Doris kills herself and just to say Doris is pregnant. I thought you should know. I just had to get this off
said
my chest.
We have committed. Did he say the sex act or any sex act?
The sex act.
Yeah.
We had not performed the sex act in some time.
For years.
That great Cohen dialogue in full force.
Also a lot of like casual racist. Stereotypes.
References to WAPs.
They have WAPs. Oh, yeah. NIPs. Yep. JAPs.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe something else, but it's just like so like. Just like laying it out, like in the times, like that whole wedding scene is so weird. Too.
Yeah,
oh, that's so funny.
And then it's like he's riding. What's the pig's name? I forget the name of that pig, but it's so perfect. It's like he's riding Gustavo.
Oh yeah, just like the piggyback bandit did not do
a giant pig.
That was funny, but that's also I wrote this down too. Like I love the way they were saying in the courtroom, looking at something changes it. So the more you look, the less you know.
Yeah.
That was also very Miller's Crossing.
Very Miller's Crossing, And really, the whole thing about having secrets and about how just knowing something can change you, even if you're not really directly involved in that. And that ties perfectly into his whole Riefenschneider's whole speech about the uncertainty principle.
Right.
This
idea. A reasonable doubt.
Mm-hmm.
This idea that observing something changes it. Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. The quantum mathematical fact that the closer you see, the closer you can observe something's momentum, you don't know its location. The closer you observe something's location, you observe its momentum. And in a vaguer sense, the harder you look at something, the more the fuzzier it appears.
Yeah, the more doubt you have.
The more doubt you have.
Which is perfect.
And perception is reality. And essentially just the very act that something has been observed changes the equation.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was a really interesting speech there. I feel like maybe Freddie Riedenschneider has a couple too many speeches that are just on the nose, hey, I'm laying out the themes of this movie right now.
Yeah.
But Tony Shalhoub does just pull it off with such aplomb. It's hard to be too upset about it.
Yeah.
He does it so well. Yeah. And then it was funny when it's like he gets the mistrial and then takes off. And then it's like...
Biggest disappointment of my career.
Yeah, wasn't buying that modern man stuff. You know what I mean? So then it's like, oh, the answer from the jury movie is like... I think the jury would have too, yeah.
And
then, so what was your take on the trials in this movie?
They were good. I was actually really happy about it.
They totally accurately lay out, like he has that moment where he's like, most people think...
There's
a sensing arraignment, and I was like, oh yeah, this is true.
Yep.
I just know from my limited traffic violation. But right. I was like, no, it's that's what it is. Yeah, like you go, you can postpone it, you can schedule an arraignment, then it changes, and then you go, and then you're there for 5 minutes, and then yeah,
the wheels of justice turn slow.
Yeah,
and no, that's. So happy because you know I hate law in like TV shows and movies.
This was the worst. Yeah. This was no A Few Good Men. You can't handle this.
Yeah, it's not Law and Order where it's like, well, we arrested him and then now you're on trial 3 days later.
Yeah, I love that they put that out there because it fit the pace of the movie too. Those things were just kind of like slowly developing. So I like that they added those details in it as well. And then what's the brother-in-law's name? I totally forgot.
Joe, I think.
Frank? I want to say Frank.
The other barber is Frank?
No.
Was it Frank?
I think it was Freddie. No, Freddie
was the lawyer.
Yeah.
Freddie Riedenschneider.
We should look that up. Well, okay, I can't look it up.
I'm almost positive it was Frank.
But I love that he was sitting there asking, like, what's going on? What's going on, Ed? Yeah. Why is it taking so... It was so good, because I was like, yeah, that's like what normal people are like in court, because you don't know what's happening. You don't know why the judge is out late. Like, where is the girl?
And then they reach over and punch the defense.
Yeah.
It was Frank.
All right.
What's that actor's name?
Michael Badalucco.
Oh, he's great,
He also showed up in O Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yeah, no, so I really liked that part, and... But he was playing the reasonable doubt part really well, too, as far as, like, bringing that out in the jury, because if you do have reasonable doubt, then you're not going to convict them. So I really liked that they were getting at that point, because it was accurately made, so...
It was accurately made, and it was true to the...
And it was a good theme. I mean, it was part of the theme, so it
was
it.
Yeah, it was true to the slowness of this legal procession. But go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, in regards to that. So then at the end, when, like, Freddie Riedenschneider gets the mistrial, and then comes back with, who's the court-appointed guy?
He gets a mistrial, and then
he comes back to his lawyer who makes him plead guilty. Mm-hmm. Like, that one, I know it's the end of the movie and they're wrapping it up and it's like, oh, it's, you know, we're putting a bow on it here. But it was so weird that the judge was like, clearly this man is a menace. Like, it felt like such a jump of, I guess we don't know the whole facts that were presented, but it just seemed like, oh, really? Like, with the, like...
Despite his speech, you mean?
No, just like the judge, like pleading guilty with extenuating circumstances. And then the judge like, no, sorry, you're going to the electric chair, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's, I don't know, because you killed someone. And I guess maybe he was pleading guilty to the whole thing of being a criminal mastermind or something. I just felt like the sentencing was very harsh. But I get it in the scope of the movie that they're like, well, we gotta...
Because in some sense, it wasn't punishment necessarily for his crimes. It was punishment for the kind of man he was. The repeated phrase that shows up throughout the film, what kind of man are you?
Right.
People don't understand. Which, if you will permit me a quick tangent here to just talk about existentialism. Because this...
I'll allow it. That was me. I'll allow it.
Just because... This film really closely mirrors the plot of The Stranger by Albert Camus, if you've ever read that book.
Yeah, but I forgot it.
If you've never read that book, it's basically about...
But he kills the guy on the beach, right?
It's the guy who... He kills this guy on the beach.
And it's an Indian or something?
It's an Arab.
He kills this guy who's an Arab.
And it's not totally clear what the circumstances are. It's not really clear whether it's in self-defense or not. But he goes on trial and he ends up getting convicted, not so much because of the circumstances, but because... He's a guy who didn't cry when his mother died.
Right.
And he seems to be this guy who's kind of disconnected from reality and doesn't have empathy the same way normal people do. So he's crucified because of that. And, you know, Albert Camus is this great existentialist writer.
Mm-hmm.
And a real quick definition of existentialism, if you don't know what I'm talking about. And Ethan and Joel Coen are both philosophy brats, so they're definitely working this kind of stuff into the movie.
Yeah, you better get this right, because if they're listening, we're listening. If they're listening and you screw this up.
Exactly, just in case they are listening, guys. Joel and Ethan. Jean-Paul Sartre said that existentialism is what you get from a position of consistent atheism. Basically, if you believe there is no God and life is essentially absurd and meaningless, what does that mean about the world and how you should live your life? And The Stranger was kind of about that, because it was about a guy who kind of didn't necessarily see any meaning in conventional morality.
Right.
And didn't necessarily feel like he needed to be attached to the world. And he got crucified by the rest of the world because of that. But before he died, at the end of the novel, spoiler alert for The Stranger, it ends in a very similar fashion to this movie, but he finds a kind of inner peace in himself and kind of realizes, this is just the shape of my life. You know, things happen, people live, people die. Such is life.
Yeah.
And I'm determined to enjoy it no matter what turns it takes. And that's kind of the same conclusion Ed Crane reaches at the end of this film, too.
Yeah.
That's why I don't think he was that dumb, but that's me.
Well, that's the interesting thing. And that's why this is ultimately, I think, a really interesting character to build a film around, is he is this guy who seems to just inherently accept things that other people don't accept, that there is... it's almost explicitly said at one point that this is a godless world. I'm thinking at the very first moment where they say that they go to the church, they're a weekly church going group,
but they're in bingo.
They're not actually praying, they're playing bingo.
Yeah, Tuesday nights.
Yeah, this is a... which is Ed seeing Francis McDormand stand up and very seriously shout bingo.
So
just
funny.
A funny comic moment. But yeah, this is a world where people just kind of do what they do. And Ed ultimately makes this kind of amoral choice, and the punishment is brought upon him tenfold. And he keeps kind of fighting against the system at parts, but at other parts he just lets it wash over him. And by the end, he's kind of come to this Zen acceptance, this is what the world is.
We could say that, but that makes me think of like what you said earlier, Josh, about
Josh.
The Buddhist element. But you could say it's not even the moments of like desire, it's like the moments in the film where he just like resists the wave that is life, like when he's like, because you know he's unhappy from his monologue. He says he doesn't really like being a barber, and like the church stuff. But then when he decides, oh, maybe I'll try to better myself, or I'll go bigger. And
it's this moment where it's one of the few moments where he strives for something more. Where he's like, I don't just want to be a barber in this loveless marriage. Maybe my future is being a dry cleaner, and maybe that'll actually be the thing that makes me happy.
Right, or I can manage Birdie's.
Yeah. Right.
Piano playing career, or even just hiring Freddie Riedenschneider.
Right.
You know, as opposed to like, and then when he finally is like, well, I'll just take the court appointed lawyer, then he just gets basically sent to jail.
Yeah.
But you know what? As we're talking about this too, I don't know that he's so much like seeking out these new desires or giving into them, because these things also just kind of came into his path. So he was kind of like, minding his own business, and he's presented with the dry cleaning opportunity.
So kind of just
wait. How did it first come to him?
He comes to cut hair.
Because I was thinking of that guy coming up to the front door. Right. So he came to cut hair, and then even the way he entered into that transaction was very abnormal.
Oh, like, so crazy, right? He goes there, and then he's like $10,000, and he goes, "I could get that." So it's like in that moment, he's like, he does the math and says.
I got the answer for this.
Because James Gandolfini's like, the next day. So it was literally like the next day.
I think it was just sort of like almost formulaic. Like he wasn't, I don't think that he was really striving to do that much. He was just kind of
saw an opportunity and went for it.
Well, not even like he saw an opportunity, because I feel like opportunity feels like this big, like you work for an opportunity. Like you get an opportunity. Like I'm going to take this opportunity. I'm going to work really hard at it. But he was just sort of like, oh, this is happening. I could keep going along with it. I'll get $10,000 because I have a way to get $10,000. So I'll just get the $10,000.
Do you really think it wasn't going through his mind at all? Hey, this is going to fuck over this guy who's screwing my wife. Because I think on some level that was impacting him as well.
Or I bet he felt like, because this is how I felt like watching the movie. I'm like, well, James Gandolfini's pretty unlikable in this. Like Billy Bob Thornton's just kind of like, all right, like seems like he's like likable, even though he's like boring and just there. You know what I mean? He's very likable. So like when I was watching him, I thought, it seems fair.
That's what I was thinking too. Like, I think it was fair because
He's not hurting anyone, and meanwhile this guy is having an affair and sort of embezzling money anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now the money that he's embezzling just gets to go to our hero.
Yeah.
And right. we all know that dry cleaning is a big thing.
So it's going to be the next big
we're
thing,
all
right.
like secretly rooting. I mean, at least I was, because I'm yeah. like, oh, yeah, getting that dry cleaning, man, that's a.
Yeah.
You could be a millionaire.
You could definitely get it. You could definitely yeah. get that sub-level.
You'll move to Beverly Hills. Yeah. Get out of Santa Rosa.
You could definitely
Rosa.
Think that sub-level. Hey, this guy is being wronged. Maybe this is just him tipping the scales of justice.
Right. It just, bit. It seemed even. Like, yeah. it didn't seem like.
That he's actually making things more even, or at least trying to.
Maybe, yeah. It didn't seem like outrageous to me, like, oh, and he gave into desire to, like, you know, screw right. somebody over and get the 10,000. I'm just sort of like, oh, I have a way and makes sense, so why
yeah.
not?
Yeah.
So.
And then the bummer, too, is then when it all goes down, you're like, oh, and he doesn't even have the 10,000 anymore to help
no.
pay for Freddie Reed.
No, he's got
yeah,
nothing.
Yeah. And even, like, with managing Birdie, that was also, like, a weird thing, because while he did have this grand dream of, like, I'm going to manage her and tour, it was also kind of like, I think it's just because it was right in front of him.
Yeah.
Like, it was almost like anything right in front of him seemed like a really good idea. And rather than, like, he was out there, like, seeking to better himself and seek for something better.
And do you think he was in love with her? Because I'm not so sure.
He was obsessed with her.
He definitely, like, I mean, the fact that he kept going over to, like, watch her play piano is kind of a creepy thing. But it definitely never seemed like there was anything predatory about it. I don't know. Unless you're reading something different into it.
I don't know if it was predatory.
Yeah, not predatory.
I think it obviously reads that way because of A, Billy Bob Thornton looks like right. a creeper. Right. And he's so silent in this movie, so it just feels creepier. It was sort of weird, like, because I'm like, oh, in real life, if I saw this guy
yeah
and I like couldn't Jesus. Hear his inner monologue, I would totally think yeah. that he
crazy,
was...
Crazy pervert.
No, he was yeah. obsessed with her, though. Like, I mean, even from the first... That's why in the first scene where he's watching her play,
I just mean I don't
was like, let's go home, because yeah. she saw it, too.
I just mean I don't think he was
woman's
obsessed...
Woman's intuition.
I just mean I don't
she
think
was
he
was also pretty drunk.
Yeah, but still, she knew what was happening.
I just mean I don't think he was obsessed with her in a sexual way.
I think he was partially sexually obsessed with her, yeah. She's old enough that he would be. I don't know how old she was. Was she like a teenager?
She's a high schooler.
Yeah.
Maybe, okay.
Maybe
she's
17
like
or something.
15, yeah. 16, 17. It's enough for him to be like into her. And I don't think that was like his main driving force necessarily, but he was definitely like into her. Like, look at the way he was talking to her when she was talking to that boy. He was like, oh,
right. oh yeah.
He
right.
played great.
That's
and then
right.
turns around
about
and
that.
Goes like the wrong way. And then he's like, oh, and then he like, turns around the other way. He was into her.
It might even be, and it's, you know, and you've got a classic Coen Brothers voiceover here, and he's a great unreliable narrator, and there's a sense where maybe he doesn't even realize everything he's thinking. Maybe he doesn't realize that he has some sort of sexual feelings for her. He's just like, I like her music, and I want her to be a big star.
I mean, the crazy thing is, now, everyone would be like, oh yeah, Scarlett Johansson.
Right, obviously.
But she's, you know what I mean? You know, yeah. like, what's funny about this is, like, a side note on her, it's like, wasn't Lost in Translation, then, like, 2-3 years later,
mm-hmm. pretty
so
soon
like,
after
this movie
was that
where
soon
she's
after?
This yeah. movie where it's like is creepy and uncomfortable, and also you know she's very kind of like not frumpy but almost like dowdy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and it's the 40s, but like
right.
she's not wearing a poodle skirt or anything. Like she looks like she's like an Amish kid, basically. You know what I mean? Like
she was
the way
wearing
she's,
a poodle skirt.
Was she wearing a poodle
without a poodle?
Without
on
a poodle,
it.
But yeah. you know what I'm saying? But she's not like
she's not like super sexy.
Oh, I'm a sexy. Yeah. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
Like she's not that archetype.
She looks
she's
very
like,
vacant.
Yeah,
and that's not a knock on Scarlett Johansson, who I think is a fine actress. I think high schoolers are just kind of vacant.
Sure, but then yeah. like 2 years later, everybody's like, oh my god, her butt at the beginning
right.
of Lost. You know
right.
what I mean? Like it's just such a funny like yeah. within the time. It's just funny that we're talking about like, well, was he attracted to her? Because it's
yeah.
like, well, within 2 years, like.
Yeah,
everybody when she's like, because she's like 20 in Lost in Translation,
right?
And so it's like the world of men is like, oh man, her butt, mm-hmm. her butt.
Yeah,
you're like you realize you're all like talking about a 19-year-old's butt.
Yeah,
and also
the movie starts.
And also, Bill Murray's older than Billy Bob Thornton. But when it's Bill Murray, it's not as creepy as Billy Bob Thornton.
Oh, because he's funny.
Because yeah, he's cool.
Bill Murray's
he's
charming.
He's chill. He's charismatic. He'll walk into your birthday party.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, so yeah, I could see that there's kind of a creeper element to it.
But then
he
refused it.
He
refused. I mean, if he was a real creeper, he probably would have taken that beach.
I don't think he was a pervert.
Right.
And I don't necessarily
he's just
think he
creepy.
Was,
okay.
He might have not even no, creepy, but he was obsessed with her. Like, that's why he thought her music was good, because he was obsessed with her, so it mm-hmm. colored his vision of her music.
We're on another sense of...
Objection. Irrelevant.
Yes.
Objection. Overrule.
Oh, man.
I almost thought he was, like, I'm like almost like robotic, like, I've never heard music before.
That's like, yeah. Yeah, I thought that, too, like,
you
a little
are,
bit like the Savage
yeah,
Beast. Like
right.
the,
you are playing
you know,
music.
The simpleton, like,
wow.
What is this?
Yeah. I've never heard anything like this before.
And then when she's like, he was deaf when he wrote this, you know, he's like, wow. Wow.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's true. I mean, he certainly wasn't getting any classical music from Frances McDormand.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Frances McDormand, who I think might have had the best performance in the movie. She's
And Tony Shalhoub.
Tony Shalhoub, too. Tony Shalhoub is great. But I loved what she was doing here. It couldn't have been farther from Marge and Fargo. She's just, she's so tense and angry and full of these rough edges. And
And just like, and like kind of knows she's not great for him, but also like, but then it's like, I love that scene where they're in the bathroom and she's like reading the newspaper. Yeah. She's like, shave my legs. And he's just like, she's like, give me a drag of your cigarette. But you're kind of like, oh, they're like the perfect couple.
All
like
All he does is
work.
They're a power couple in this moment. Yeah. I was like, that's comfortable enough to just like sit in the edge of the tub, share a cigarette with your wife, and you shave her. You use your barber skill
like
to shave her
legs. I thought that was super intimate, by the way. I was like, would I ever have anybody shave my legs?
You
like,
would if your husband was an old-time barber, I think.
I guess Yeah. He does the best job.
You'd be like, that'd be the best,
She wants her to...
Fucking treat for her, you know?
She wants him to do things for her. He will just have... He will just do things that are asked of him. It works.
Yeah. Except for the sex act.
Except for the sex act. Creighton Tolliver says pointedly at one point, all he's looking for is a silent partner for the dry cleaning thing. And it's kind of perfect, right? It's like, who's a better silent partner than this guy?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And it's almost true of the marriage, too. I think she just wanted a silent partner.
Well, 100% that's what he said. She's like, she liked that I didn't talk very much.
Yeah.
And then Tony Shalhoub's like, I like you. You don't talk much. You know what I mean? Right. Everybody loves him.
Yeah.
That I guess, is just hitting me, is what's so great about this movie. It's so like tragic because the whole movie, everyone's like, I love you because you don't say much. And then by the end of the movie, it's like, oh, because you never said anything.
You're dying.
People are just throwing stuff on you. And
people feel drawn to him.
Yeah, it's such a weird...
I felt drawn to him, though. I mean, that's what I liked it, too. And so I was watching it last night, kind of sick. It was very nice, slow pace, but I really liked his performance. Like, I was just like, I mean, I liked his character even, too. I was like, oh, it's really nice to have a Coen Brothers character who's just, like, slowly going through the story without being like, this, that, whatever, and then I can't keep up. So last night was perfect for me. But I liked that kind of character. It's a good break.
It is an interesting character. I don't want to overpraise the performance because I think it's easy to say, oh, he's so great in this.
He's staring at shoes.
I think
when you're acting, you're acting, though.
I think it's kind of... But I also think it's easier to just kind of play a blank guy than it is to actually play like a serious emotional performance.
Maybe. But there's something great about Billy Bob Thornton. Like, and then it was in black and white. Like, he's got like...
He has a face for black and white.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. Like, he sort of looks like he looks kind of like a Humphrey Bogart. You know what I mean?
He's very, very grimy.
He's really dark eyes.
Lots of lines on his face.
And this is 2001, so this is like 5-6 years after Sling. I mean, this is when Billy Bob Thornton is like one of the biggest stars
in Hollywood. Like, this is peak Billy Bob Thornton for sure.
It's great. And that's what's kind of cool, that he did this movie.
Yeah.
You know, because he was doing, I mean, fuck, he was doing what? Armageddon? What was the other?
But nowadays, he does still work, and he's like still, you know, doing great work, but he is more of a character actor than a movie star. And and I don't think he has done a lot of Coen Brothers stuff since then, although he does have a major role in Fargo, the TV show. He kind of works as a Coen Brothers character very well.
But I still think his performance was good. I'm going to definitely, like, take issue with that, because maybe it is easier to sometimes play, like, a... Why that one? Like, out of all of the, you know?
That's my feelings. My feelings are here are ugh. I'm just saying that I think it's easy.
He's using you against you.
It was really bad the first episode we had.
Because I think Billy Bob is almost just kind of... I think it's very effective in the film. But I just want to say it's not hard to just kind of show up on set and be like, yeah, okay. Yeah, I cut the hair.
No, sure. But I disagree with you, because I think a lot of other people would come off as like blank or vacant, and while he definitely came off as like...
I think he came off as pretty blank. And
I guess I just disagree with that. I don't think he was that
the
vacant.
Word that kept coming
expressive.
The word that kept coming to mind through this film was phlegmatic. Like, he's just very kind of just
like phlegmy.
What's phlegmatic mean?
Well, in I mean, in a sense, literally, yes. It kind of goes back to when people thought we were controlled by the four humors in our body.
Oh,
you know,
sure.
Like blood and bile and phlegm. And being a phlegmatic person meant being a very still, calm, unemotional person. Maybe he smokes a lot. Doesn't drink, but smokes a shitload.
Smoked great.
Yeah.
He did some great cigarette work.
Great period detail, always smokes an unfiltered Chesterfield cigarette.
Oh,
wasn't it?
I like that.
Very, very true to the period.
They finally pay attention to detail.
They always pay attention to detail. It's just not always period accurate.
Yeah.
In this case, it's pretty period accurate, though.
So I want to clarify something, too, since you asked a little while ago whether this podcast is about convincing me that a movie's good, which I love that you said that because I'm such a hater. It's just I'm like really particular, so I hate on a lot of our films. Not like in overall because the movies are all great, but like I'll have very specific problems with it.
Certain things stick in your craw.
They do. And so like the realistic part is one of them. A lot of it is character relationships that don't make sense to me. Mm-hmm. And maybe you're surprised I haven't talked about that a lot in this episode, because in a lot of other ones I'm like, that doesn't make sense. Like these people wouldn't be into each other. This all made sense. But also the period work was much better here than like Miller's Crossing didn't make sense. And Hudsucker Proxy also didn't make sense for the time period.
But both of those movies are pastiches. They are pastiches of different tropes and different time periods from different films.
I know, but I like this one was right. I was watching it like a hawk. I was like, that is 40s furniture.
Well, this
That's
one,
a 40s car.
Well, this
and
one,
the cigarettes part is great.
Well, this one is a much more pure genre exercise. I think it really is supposed to very strongly emulate the films of the 40s and the period of the 40s.
Great.
Just layering in a couple of their own signature themes into that setting.
Yeah, but I think it's distracting when it's not accurate sometimes. That was just my problem with it.
Fair enough. Okay.
What were you going to say?
What
other
are you going to say?
Oh, no, I was going to say, we haven't talked about, I mean, we sort of alluded to it, but like really that scene, I do love that scene, even though it is kind of a hiccup. Or maybe it's not. When Anne Nerdlinger comes and like has that creepy, like bug-eyed like monologue about the aliens.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of a hiccup, but it does fit into the whole thing where it's like, people just want to, like, nobody's going to catch him, or that she's going to, you know what I mean? Where she's like, no, it's a conspiracy. Like, I know.
Yeah.
I know she didn't do it. You know, because
because
he was raped by aliens.
He was raped by aliens.
And the government, this goes big. This is big, you know, and it's kind of funny because I feel like in that moment, he's starting to, like, take control of the situation where he's like, do you want to come? Where, he, you know, his body language and what he's, the few words that he's able to blurt out are like, this is insane.
This is
totally
crazy.
Like,
please
stop talking. But it's such a great
But he can't shake the idea of aliens after that moment. It keeps
No, then he has that dream. He has his fever death
and,
dream.
And the hubcap that looks like a UFO. And
Which is better than the flying car.
Yeah.
Than the car
Whatever. I love the flying car.
Of course you love that.
I love the flying car. Whatever.
That's very
one showy moment. Come on. Allow them one showy moment.
I know. That was a thing. But that when I thought, I was like,
yeah, but I like how you said that. Like, you guys have to.
Fucking hands. You know what I mean? Just be like, no, we're just gonna make this amazing film noir, you know, in 2001.
But I do want to talk about that monologue, because I think there is a deeper meaning there. That's not just, oh, this is a crazy lady. She unloads all this stuff on him, and then she talks about how sometimes knowledge is a curse. And the fact that she has had to walk around carrying this secret, and that Big Dave had to walk around carrying this secret, and the way it kind of crippled and changed them.
Yeah.
And it leads pretty neatly into later on in the movie, and this is probably after Doris kills herself in jail, when he says, I felt like I had become privy to some sort of secret about the world and the way the world
works.
Oh,
when he's walking.
Yeah, when he's just kind of walking around.
Staring at him.
Yeah. And that he felt like he was kind of carrying this burden, and he had no one to talk to, and that he felt like a ghost, and that he felt like that he wasn't there. And that's where the title of the movie literally comes in there. And so much of this film is about the burden of caring about carrying around these stories and these secrets that you can't tell anybody. Like that crazy alien story.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And then at the end of the movie, he sees a spaceship.
Yeah, but he's dreaming.
Yeah, that's his dream.
I'm not saying that's a literal spaceship. I don't think that's a literal spaceship. But
you mean when he has the dream, like he walks out of the prison and looks up and sees a spaceship.
Yeah. Right. Oh, definitely. Yeah. But I'm not. I don't think that's an actual UFO that's come down to him in real life.
Well, no, because he's dreaming.
Yeah, it's his dream. Wait, what are you talking about?
Yeah, what are you talking about?
Yeah, this is right before.
Josh, what are you talking about?
This is right before the end of the movie, right?
Yeah. He's dreaming. He's lying in his cot, and then they wake him up.
Yeah.
To like walk to the electric chair.
Right.
So he's having a dream that, because he walks through the prison and opens the door into the courtyard, looks up, sees a spacecraft, and then closes the door.
Yeah, nice.
You know what? I actually thought maybe that was just him taking a nighttime walk at prison.
What? Oh my god, that's amazing!
Now I'm realizing you can't take a nighttime walk in prison. They kind of have lights out and you gotta stay in your cell.
Well, and he's on death watch, like, because they're watching.
Yeah.
But I did think I forgot, I like got fuzzy, you know, that I'd seen it before, and in that moment I was like, wait, does he just get abducted by aliens?
Right, yeah.
And
yeah.
I almost thought, I was like, oh, the Coen brothers would fucking do that. Yeah, you know? And
that's it's
like,
what I thought it was going to happen because I haven't seen it before.
I guess what I was saying, I didn't think the alien was real, but I also didn't think it was a dream either. Now I'm picking up on
it. Oh, Josh, that's so adorable. Right.
Anyways.
Yeah, because after he closes the door, then there's a hand on his
right.
Wakes up. And
well,
like,
but anyways, why do you think he is dreaming about that? Why do you think he continues to be kind of obsessed with this alien spacecraft?
Maybe because he's an alien on Earth.
Maybe because... He was in solitary, in jail, and he didn't get any of that probe action.
Right.
I mean, we're just spitballing.
Yeah.
So,
right.
If an alien
just spitballing
comes,
or maybe he had been probed, and so now he's dreaming about aliens.
Now he wants more.
But just, why is he obsessed with aliens?
Yeah.
But maybe because he feels like the man who wasn't there. Like he's on Earth. He's a human being. He's interacting with humans. Nobody sees him. Nobody gets him. Even when they do see him, they don't get him. So maybe he's like connecting to this, like, maybe I'm an alien. I don't know.
Maybe it is a need to connect with a higher power or a deeper meaning in a godless universe.
But I don't mean higher power, because I don't think aliens are higher power. Maybe he just didn't feel like a human. He's like, maybe I'm an alien.
I didn't get that, but I'm also offering a different theory, which is that aliens kind of are a higher power in a world where God doesn't exist. Maybe you could think, maybe if there are aliens out there watching over us, who might at some point offer up the secrets of the universe, maybe that is some higher thing to believe in.
I think I felt
maybe
like
God
was,
is
I
an
felt
alien.
Like it was in the dream because it was like this like connection that he had with them, where it was like this like nod of like they're like because he heard the story from Anne, and so now he sees these aliens like, and it's all kind of on his mind, and like the image of the aliens looking at him with the light, and then being like it was almost like
yeah.
Yeah, we know, buddy. Good luck. You know what I mean? Yeah. Just like take off where it's like, well, we all know. Like we're aliens. We know everything. You know everything. You're the only person in the world who knows everything. Like you and us are the only things that know everything about what has unfolded here.
Yeah.
Because everybody, like the judge, the prison, like Freddie Riedenstein, like nobody sort of listens to him when he does talk.
Yeah.
But he knows exact, like, I mean, I guess... That's kind of the funny thing where he's writing this, and I was thinking to myself, yeah, but A, he goes, I'm sorry I stretched it out. They're paying me 5 cents a word. Like, where's the money? I guess he's going to give it to Frank or
something.
Right,
that's what I was thinking too.
Like, where's the money going to go? And then I was also thinking, like, are they just going to publish this all unedited? Like, this might be another thing that just gets, like, it's just, like, pissing in the wind. Like, no one's ever going to
maybe they'll never publish it at all, for all he knows. Maybe they just said, hey, write your story, and maybe we'll publish it.
I did think... This is in case we get the comic book contingent listening to the podcast.
Yeah.
When the camera shows, like, the... I guess it's an earlier issue of the men's magazine that's a picture of him, or it's, like, an illustration of him. Like,
oh, is this when the kid is reading it in the barbershop? Because he is, like, reading a comic book in the barbershop.
No, you mean on the table
where he's writing, and then there's a picture of him, and it's, like, I was married for 10 years before I realized I was, like, a lunatic or like it's really funny because it's like this artistic drawing of Billy Bob Thornton, like a comic book drawing of him.
Yeah.
But it also does look like a character from the Spider-Man mythology named Tombstone.
Oh.
Who, by the way, gets in a fight with Spider-Man in prison.
Oh.
Which, and that all happened just before, you know what I mean? I'm not conspiracy theory, but the Tombstone arc was pretty big in the Spectacular Spider-Man, probably around like 98, 99. So
you know what, the Coen brothers, huge comic book buffs. I'm sure that they're learning.
Are they really?
No, not at all.
But it was a funny image, but then my brain was like, oh, is that Tombstone?
Huh. Maybe it is.
Who was an alien? No, wouldn't it be so funny if, like, right now it's like, whoa!
Whoa!
Oh my God. And then we realize it's a mashup of The Stranger and Tombstone from The Spectacular Spider-Man.
What a perfect comic book / great like existential novel that would be.
Now I want to reread The Stranger.
Yeah, me too.
Go back to 10th grade.
You know what? It's a short book. It's only like a little more than 100 pages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like
it's totally worth it.
For me, 10th grade, that was the year we read The Stranger and Catcher in the Rye. And I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. Yeah. Now that I go back, I was like, wow, that was 10th grade was a real banner year, watershed year for...
The Metamorphosis, Kafka.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think...
That was 10th grade for you?
That was for me, yeah. Which I think we'll definitely talk about Kafka more for some of these movies. Mm. Mm. I'm building up the literary references.
Yeah.
I just want to sound smart.
Did you guys ever have to read... Speaking of books I've thought I should go back and read, but I have not, and I probably won't, is The Sound and the Fury.
I've never read Faulkner.
I haven't read The Sound of the Fury. That's one book where I'm like, I could see myself like on my deathbed is when I reread that to be like, I'm going to get this now.
I should read that.
It's such a confusing book. I often like when people talk about, oh yeah, I should reread that book. I always want to know if anyone's reread The Sound of the Fury. So I know if like I was just not that smart in 11th grade, like, if I couldn't handle it, or if it really is as fucking confusing as I thought it was.
Now I'm going to read it.
Because Stranger, Catcher in the Rye, Kid, like all these other great books, I'm like, oh no, no, I know, I have a more than vague
Stranger's a good one. Yeah, Stranger's good because the plot is pretty straightforward. There's just lots of interesting thematic stuff going on beneath
the
surface.
And then isn't there, is it The Cure or Morrissey? Who's got the song, like I Killed an Arab, which...
Is that a reference to The Stranger?
Yeah, yeah, it's a famous, it's either Morrissey or The Cure, or maybe not, but it's something like that.
Son, British rock.
I was really bummed that Doris killed herself in prison, which is obviously obviously that's a sad moment. But but the last time we saw her before that, it seemed like that she had kind of, you know, Freddie Riefenstahl was like, I'm gonna get you off the hook.
Yeah,
he's got the whole story worked out. She kind of laughs a little bit. It's one of the first times you actually see her kind of have a sliver of hope. Before that, she just looks drained.
Well, because she has already known when that moment when Billy Bob Thornton says, I killed him, and starts explaining it.
Yeah.
Like, you know that she's like...
Oh, right.
She knows that shit's real.
Yeah, so she's... I mean, it totally makes sense, where she's like, if I get off, like, what am I gonna...
That's actually a really good point. Yeah. If I do get out of jail, I'm just gonna be in an equally bad situation.
Yeah, that totally made sense to me why she killed... I mean, it was sad, but it was like, oh, yeah, no, like, that makes total sense.
Ultimately sad for Billy Bob Thornton, because she killed herself, so they wouldn't let him.
Yeah.
He was on death watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, we should wrap up and do some final thoughts about the movie.
Great.
All right.
Is there a sting for
final thoughts.
Do you want to do final thoughts and then gavel?
Yeah.
Closing arguments.
Everybody will now present their closing arguments.
I'll allow it.
Murmur, 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 murmur.
So, the French critic Michel Cement said that this was a 90-minute film that plays for 2 hours. He said that as a criticism.
I like the 2 hours, but
and I actually kind of agree with you. I actually think maybe the most interesting parts of this film is whatever that half hour they added in. That's not just
the duck
straight up
part.
Yeah,
duck.
Yeah, exactly. Just those moments that are more thoughtful. And when I was watching the movie, they played slowly. But in retrospect, I actually think that's really where the beat is.
Mm-hmm.
Just the moments that we were spending with this character and kind of seeing how he's handling all these strange events that are being thrust upon him and how he's handling the story of his life that eventually comes to an end.
Yeah.
It is a slow movie. And it's not, I think, a movie that's for everybody's tastes. And I think, at least my personal taste, I prefer the Raising Arizonas and the Hudsucker Proxies and the ones that are equally thematically strong but go a little bit bigger and a little bit broader and are more conventionally entertaining. But there's a lot to unpack here and a lot of interesting stuff.
I think, it is slow. And, you know, I don't know if I hate to be the dissenter here, but I may not love the full, but I could see it be between 90 and 2 hours. Maybe an hour and 45.
Right.
I could have cut 10 minutes.
15 minutes.
I think it's 156. As I remember seeing the bar play. But I do, because also I think the pacing, but it's different than other slow movies because the pacing is so great, I feel like for the first hour. Like, it's not one of those, you know when you see a slow movie and you go, man, this is slow beginning to end.
Yeah.
Like, this is such a, it's a very rich It's a very rich movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Ironic because it's in black and white, right? So it's two-tone, but yeah, it's such a cool movie. Like, I remember when you guys asked if I wanted to come in and do this one, I was so excited because I remember seeing the movie and really liking it. And still like it because it really does stand out.
And I was excited that you were excited to do it because it is one of their more underseen movies.
Which is so funny because I mean, I guess it's because I haven't seen all their films. So for me, this is like... Like, I think this is a very cool movie, and I actually it's one of my favorites that they've done, because I think it's such a well. If we're putting it in the world for me, if I'm putting it in the world of Coen Brothers films, it's such a well crafted. Like, here's the world. There's not a ton of questions of like, wait, what the fuck? Like, how does this come out? You know what I mean? I won't even mention the movie that I want to mention because it's further down on your list.
Oh.
out of respect to
thank you,
Judge Jails.
I was when I get there though, I'm gonna tell you. I was, the one.
I was about to take a guess because I have a feeling I know what movie you're talking about, but I'll leave it unspoken.
I'm sure
leave
it'll it happen, and I'll be freaking out the whole time, really upset. Yeah.
So it's like, but it's just one of these cool things, and that maybe that's why like the flying car stood out to me a little bit, or yeah. things like that. Because even the alien spaceship at the end, you're like, oh, I get why he's seeing this. Like,
yeah.
So it's such a cool. It's so weird. Like it's because it's so stylized, and you almost think this could happen, even though there's moments of it. That's like my biggest final thought, where it's like it's such a great story where you're like, oh shit, I could kind of see this happening to someone. Like there's a bit of contrivances that happen, but that's like anything. But you're like, well, this.
But ultimately, yeah, the
totally
way yeah.
happened is the way it just cascades.
The way that things go wrong are ways that things go wrong in real life.
Yeah, and it's not like as much as, I mean, you mentioned Raising Arizona, like as much as I love that movie, it's like, okay, there's not like a motorcycle, Dog the Bounty Hunter, super motorcycle mercenary. There's nothing that's like crazy. Right.
There's no big crazy caricature characters here.
Yeah. And like even the Freddie Riedenschneider is a little big, but like still you're like, well, he's kind of stylized and like it's kind of awesome. That character probably exists.
I think there are
lawyers like that.
Fast-talking Sacramento lawyer. You know?
I think there are lawyers like that.
I will agree that there are lawyers like that.
Right. Sustained.
Yeah.
Sustained.
Yeah.
Totally.
Okay, I do see that. And it is. There's no reason to hit the.
That's so unrealistic. That wasn't even a complaint that I had the whole time.
When you hit that, I thought like,
sometimes
I can't see your mouth. You just said that.
When you hear it like on the actual podcast, when I hear it back, it's the same volume as me. So sometimes I don't immediately know that it was a soundboard and not me. It's terrible.
Yeah, but maybe you need like a weird like a penny whistle, like a boo or slide whistle or something. That's so unrealistic.
Yeah, that would be better. So yeah, you'll notice that this is probably one of the least amount of times that I've said that's so unrealistic, because I think the logic of the movie worked, like a lot of what you were saying too, where you could see this happening. I don't really need things to be like, Jeremy kept calling me out for being like naturalistic or whatever, which is not my problem. I just want things to logically flow in the world that they're in. And I felt like
The math has to make sense.
Right. Yeah.
It's interesting. This is not naturalistic, but it is kind of stylized, but it does play more realistic than something
because
like
Because the math adds up. That's always when I have a realism complaint, it's always about like the math or the logic of something in that space or the world they've created.
Look, I love a Raising Arizona because I think sometimes things that don't necessarily make real world sense make character sense.
Maybe, but also Raising Arizona was one of my least favorites so far, as we know.
Which is crazy bullshit, because that's a movie I had no complaints about.
I love that movie too. I think it's great. Yeah. However, I also like, but that's like what I was,
I don't hate it.
Crazy unrealistic stuff in
there. It's my least favorite.
Still entertaining.
That's the thing. Entertaining.
It's crazy that you've got these like, kidnappers who can just kind of get off the hook at the end and go through all these crazy back and forths. But it's a farce. And all the crazy plot things that happen just play like a farce, and it all seems to make sense with these characters.
You're in the wrong episode. This is not about
care.
Raising Arizona.
I don't care.
Right,
I want to support Raising Arizona. I don't care.
We know you love it, but so I'm not even hating on it either. It's just I guess when I watch movies, I'm like the least entertained by movies that are just supposed to be entertaining. Hence my "I hate movies" quote. Like it came from Darkman, which some people like, and I'm like, oh, it's like not fun for me. I don't really like movies that are just like
Liam Neeson movie.
The Liam Neeson movie. Yeah,
I love Liam Neeson, but it's like I think I'm not really that entertained by like typical. Like entertaining stuff in movies, which is my problem.
See, maybe that's
and that's why.
That's my cross to bear, that I'm entertained by entertaining things.
Oh, zing.
Jesus.
Is it fair to say though, Jackie, that this, I thought of this too. The thing that's great about this movie, and like it's sort of traditional, but like we kind of see the steps. Like we see you, I guess like I feel like you can see it's that thing like, oh, don't go down that room. You know what I mean? Like every step of the way, you're like, oh, no, don't. Like, you know that he's like heading towards danger. And then it kind of happens.
Right. But it doesn't happen the way you predict.
It doesn't. Which is cool. It keeps you guessing. But then there's nothing. There's no like, what? Like in the Big Lebowski, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what? I don't know where the fuck he's. And then characters come out and you're like, I don't know where the fuck this person came from. But like when stuff happens in this movie, you go, oh shit, I didn't think about that.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But that
but
could
still
happen.
Adds up.
But yeah. It's played for comic effect of the Big Lebowski. You know, John Polito shows up and says, I'm working for the Knudsens. The Knudsens? Yeah. You know, it becomes a meta joke that all these weird characters keep entering the fray.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. But you're also like, this is so...
unrealistic.
Some people who don't like that could be so taken out. I feel like someone, if they hate this movie, it's just because they're like, I don't like black and white films. Or they're like, I hate film noir. You know what I mean? Like it's a good story.
Or they didn't
story.
Talk enough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, why is he talking? Why is he smoking? He's right. His mouth doesn't move.
Right. Why is all the piano music so sad? There is just a lot of really sad music in this movie.
It's beautiful.
The music was so... Though. Honestly, like, I'm so happy that if I had to watch Raising Arizona last night, I would have just been annoyed. I'd be like, oh, I can't watch this. It was like the
but
perfect...
But that is fun music. Yeah, come on.
How's I know, but
that,
I didn't
how is that worse than sad piano sonatas?
Oh, man, that's beautiful. Yeah, it's
yeah.
It was Beethoven, Brahms. What else we got in there?
Beethoven, yeah, overrated.
I let the... Okay. No, I let the credits go to the end when I watched it. I was like, this is nice. I'm going to keep listening to it. So I really liked that the math added up. I had less complaints than I thought I would because I tend to think like... I'm always like watching like a hawk being like, ugh, that wouldn't happen. Or I always have like problems. You know, I always have problems with all their female characters.
To me,
everything was fine.
To me, I think you got to loosen up on that stuff and just kind of accept sometimes crazy things happen out of nowhere. Just
are you saying
says
I'm like
a man says you got to loosen up about the female characters?
Let me mansplain to Jackie here for a second.
Boy.
Or I was just going to say.
No.
I'm not going to let no man tell me how I'm going to live my life,
you're
okay?
You're watching movies wrong. That's my final statement on it.
You're watching movies wrong.
Yeah, okay.
Excuse me, miss.
No. Obviously,
but
I'm not watching movies wrong.
You might be saying that I'm swimming upstream like a salmon when I'm watching movies, which is possible. But that's also one of the things I liked about this, which is I recognize that I can be a little bit like of a salmon and like, you know, I don't know, going up against things. So since it's a recent theme in my life, I think I particularly liked it happening because like, I wouldn't say I'm uptight because I'm definitely not. Like,
no,
you know, I'm not.
You're
I'm like super
not.
Chill.
Yeah.
But there's like certain things that I think I'll be very specific about. And so I specifically really liked in the beginning when he was like, you know, she's having an affair, but like, it's a free country. And I just, it's like, no, you don't want that in a marriage for sure. You don't want that.
Right.
But I liked that his attitude was like, well, you know, it sort
happens.
Of is
what
like,
what
I'm
going to
make
do?
Her love me. Like, I don't know. There were parts about that I really enjoyed. So. I like this movie. It was up there for me.
He does have that Zen thing, but the dude in The Big Lebowski, he's also a Zen character. He also kind of tends...
Yeah, but it was too wacky.
That's...
But also, this is not a Big Lebowski episode,
right.
So I don't want to...
But he also takes things with humor.
That. Although
I think Ed just takes things kind of very solemnly, and he does seem like this very solemn character. And maybe that's harder for me to relate to.
Oh my God, this is an improv metaphor, not even metaphor, but it's because you love to always be the crazy person
that's
and
true.
I'm always a straight man.
That is
so
true.
So this makes a lot of sense why I relate to these ones more.
And I more relate to somebody who is more zen, but also tends to take things with humor and kind of see the fun side of life. And
oh,
Ed
I'm
Crane
humorless.
Is not somebody who sees the fun side of life.
Just like me.
Well, he does want to be the Colonel Parker.
He does want to be the Colonel Parker.
Birdie's,
it was like this moment of like deviating from being a...
Right. One of those few moments.
Jackie, is this maybe the moment in the podcast or in your watch? Like, this could be actually like a pivotal moment. Like, this movie and the salmon thing, like, you just have to observe, like, how your judgment of the films, how you're taking in these films, like, if it changes from this moment on, like, this movie could be so important.
It could be.
Yeah.
I don't dispute that.
In your movie watching career.
Maybe you just need to accept the mystery.
Wow.
And
cue Jurassic Park theme music.
Well, actually,
of course, that's not it.
Actually,
it's Coen Brothers, but still,
that's probably a perfect moment to cue the theme for our final segment of the show, which is a little something called Raising Arizona. Our final segment of the show, Josh, is a segment where we have a quiz loosely inspired by the movie, and you and Jackie are going to be facing off at a few multiple choice questions.
Oh.
And the theme of this week's quiz is barbershops and haircuts.
Ooh.
So we're going to see who
Ombre.
Knows. Ombre, you did pull that out.
You won the quiz.
All right, so, and each of these are going to have three possible answers, and if you know the answer, I don't know, just say ding and you'll buzz in.
Okay.
But both you guys are going to end up answering. You'll figure it out. Question number one. The spinning red, white, and blue pole that you see in barbershops has been a symbol for barbershops since the Middle Ages.
Whoa.
What does that barber pole mean? Where did it originally come from? A.
Oh, I was like, this could be multiple choice, right?
It is multiple choice.
Just tell me your best guess.
A. Barbers back in the day were also surgeons, and the red stripes stood for blood. B. Barbers used to give out candy canes that looked like that pole after each haircut. C. Barbers would have their clients grip a grooved pole to steady themselves during close shaves.
Ding. A. Sorry.
Oh, we have to buzz in?
You have to buzz in. I mean, Jackie says A.
You can just say whatever you want to, but I just want to say it.
I would say A also.
You are both correct.
That's right. I think I kind of knew that one from somewhere.
Yeah, you might have. That's just kind of a Snapple fact. But in the Middle Ages...
Like we took out your lung, and why don't we give you a trick?
Right. Yeah. In the Middle Ages, barbers were known as barber surgeons, and they would cut hair and also perform tooth extractions, leechings, and enemas. The red stripe was for blood. The white stripe was for bandages. The blue stripe, Americans added in to make it more patriotic.
Oh, but then they took it out for like the... Red and white feels more classic.
Yeah.
It's true. It's not. It's
fucking Americans.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Always
America.
Fucking
Americans.
America.
Question number two. The barber pole has a completely different meaning in Asia, however. What would you expect if you walked into an Asian shop with a barber's pole? A brothel. B, a mafia den. C, a fight club.
Ding.
Yeah.
I'm going to say B.
Mafia den?
Yeah.
I was going to say A.
A brothel?
Yeah.
Jackie gets the points.
Ah, oh, so then they're all
Why would
A.
a mafia have a
I don't
sign?
Know. Maybe.
I'm just saying.
I thought A was too obvious. I was really overthought. I know. I was like, why would there be two A's in a row?
Oh, it messes with you. That's what I thought.
Josh is smarter than that.
Oh, I definitely mess with you guys.
See, I kind of...
Yeah. It makes
I
the
thought
most sense.
So, yeah, I thought that A would also, not be an A in a row, but then...
Yeah, also all the brothels I went to in Thailand all had barber poles, so...
What? You should have known.
Yeah.
In South Korea, the pole can mean either brothel or barbershop. Mm-hmm. Some stores have two poles spinning in opposite directions. Those are brothels disguised as barbershops. In case you find yourself in South Korea.
What about a barbershop disguised as a brothel?
Yeah.
So it's like you're in a shady part of town, so everyone's like, oh, this is just a brothel, but then it's like...
So you're expecting to get laid, and then they just cut your hair?
Yeah, or like it's like a Footloose... Like Footloose, where they can't dance, is like a town in Asia where it's like you can't cut your hair.
Right.
And then you have a brothel disguised as a barbershop disguised as a brothel.
Makes sense to me.
I think it's a brilliant Coen Brothers plot.
I think they listen to this podcast, so don't be surprised if they take that idea for the next one.
Do you really think they listen to this podcast?
I don't know. Could be true.
Maybe. All right. Question number three. True or false? Immediately yes. after you shave, your hair grows back faster.
False.
Josh says false. Jackie.
Immediately after you. I'm going to say true.
Jackie gets another point.
See, I thought that was a myth because I know as a guy, I was like, right. Oh, it comes back faster. And
here's the thing.
But is that your experience when you shave?
It feels that way, but it's also, oh, well, I don't want to spoil this because this is quoted in the movie. Is there a question about hair growing on dead people on this quiz?
No.
Oh. Because that, remember he says that
he says
in the film.
That, right.
And you're right. That is a real existential thing where he's like, it's part of us. We cut it off. But he's like, someone told me your hair still grows. That's actually a myth.
Here's the thing.
That's your body. Your body is shrinking after you die. So the hair is not growing. Your body is, and it just looks like it's, your nails and everything. It's like you're actually, it's just receding.
Yeah.
So it's your nails are not still growing after you're dead and like your hair. Mm. Right. So that's why I thought this was the same.
Here's the thing. Shaving has no permanent effect on the rate of hair growth. But immediately after you shave, within the first few hours, there is an immediate increase in hair growth speed and then it levels up.
Oh, so it like boosts, you get like a hormonal boost.
You get a quick boost and then it slows back down.
That makes sense because it feels like every time I shave, it's like my hair is like, oh no, it's like, oh, we have to defend this face.
Otherwise like the skin will close up and then like it'll be like the follicle will poke through and it'll be painful maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, see the reason I've been told a lot that that's a myth or at least that it grows back stronger or thicker or whatever. Yeah.
It definitely doesn't grow back stronger or thicker.
Okay, but see I still don't believe that because based on my own experience I'm like it's never gotten it's never become less and they always tell you that's a myth, so I was just being a little bit contrarian to be like, you're saying, like, I don't know. I've always been told it's a myth and I just don't believe it.
Well,
that's how I got to that conclusion.
I heard it was a myth too, but I looked it up and in the first few hours it does grow faster. That's a fact. All medical fact.
Interesting.
Franco, you're going to listen to this and you're going to check me later.
It's like wounding So it like stimulates like growth
factors. Yeah, right. Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Science.
Question. Who did Complex Magazine name as the recipient of the worst celebrity haircut of all time? All time. A, Justin Timberlake, circa 1998. B, Billy Ray Cyrus, circa 1992. Ooh. C, Dennis Rodman, circa 1995.
Wow. It's a very good selection. I applaud you just for putting
that. A lot of bad celebrity haircuts.
Okay. I'm going to say... This is weird, but maybe I'm starving for points here. I'm down. I'm going to say Dennis Rodman.
All right.
And I'm going to say, even though it was sort of like cutting edge and it was cool, they were fucking awful. Like, it was worse than skunk haircut. I'm going to say Justin Bieber's too easy.
Timberlake.
No, I said Justin Bieber.
I did say Timberlake.
Oh, you said Timberlake.
Timberlake. 1998.
NSYNC era Timberlake.
So that's like curly hair, blonde,
parted in the middle.
Spikes, or that too, yeah.
It was like bleach blonde and curly.
Yeah, That's still not that bad. Oh, I thought you said Bieber for some reason. I was like, that's too easy. But yeah. I'm still going to say Timberlake maybe is too easy. And I have no idea what Billy Ray Cyrus's hair looked like.
It was basically a mullet.
Yeah.
Jackie?
I feel like you're doing tells. And I want to say it's C, but I'm just going to say A. Because I personally think that's the worst one out of all of them. A.
It is C.
Oh!
Yeah.
I knew it. I was testing his theory.
I've got a poker face.
No, you don't. I can hear it also when we play them. He's like, oh, you think it's C? Cool.
Okay,
like
fine.
There's always a tell.
I'm stone-faced from now on.
And I called it before you did the... Like,
now we're tied.
Yeah. Okay. No, are we? I think I have a point. More.
Yeah, no, you still have a point.
Oh, Josh, come on. I still got a point.
All right.
That wasn't a bonus.
The word barber comes from the Latin word barba, which translates to what? A, burn. B, beard. C, bear.
Barba means...
Beer?
Either burn, beard, or bear. It translates to one of those in Latin. The word barba, which later etymologically led to the word barber.
Burn is the first one?
Burn, beard, bear. Which one? Burn, beard, bear.
I'm gonna say bear.
I'm gonna say burn because I feel like you're just making up that word.
It's beard.
too easy.
I
knew it wasn't C though. Because I was like, no, that's just a
pretty straightforward. That one is pretty straightforward.
God damn it!
Yeah. I know.
It messes with you.
It messes with you. Yeah.
It's a good test.
Mm-hmm. All right. True or false? Sweeney Todd, the famous barber of Fleet Street, who killed his customers and had them baked into pies, was a real person.
True.
I'm going to say true also.
You guys are both wrong. It's false.
Go away, Josh. Mm.
One researcher named Peter Haining has tried to prove that Sweeney Todd was a real historical figure who went on trial for murder in 1800, but no other researchers have been able to verify his claims. So
I confused him with Jack the Ripper.
Yep. Jack the Ripper was a real person.
Yeah, it was a real person.
Definitely a real person.
No, good friend of mine. We would go get beers together.
A cappella four-part harmony music, often called barbershop music, was named for the impromptu singing sessions that would occur in mid-19th century barbershops, usually in African-American shops that would also double as community centers. Barbershop singers have their own vocabulary for different vocal techniques. For instance, in barbershop singing, what is a brown note? A, a very low note. B, a note sung from the chest or diaphragm. C, a raspy or guttural note.
It is a very low note.
I'm really mad right now because when I was in middle school, I was in barbershop.
Were you? And you never heard about brown notes?
If I did, I don't remember.
One thing it's definitely not. It is not a note that will make you shit yourself.
Brown note.
Wait, what are the options again?
A very low note, a note sung from the chest or diaphragm, a raspy or guttural note.
I really don't know, so I'm going to say a low note.
Okay. You guys are both wrong. It is a note sung from the chest or diaphragm.
That was my second choice.
That's a weird...
You know, the difference between singing like, and ah, from the chest. That's a brown note.
Yeah, but your chest... You, your chest and your diaphragm are two different things. Ah, well.
It's in the same area. The lower.
We don't like this question.
Yeah,
just
we don't.
Keep
we're
moving.
Two. We are musicians.
All right.
Yeah.
Clearly. So. Sure. Very yeah, clearly. Obviously.
I don't agree with the diaphragm. Diaphragm's not your chest.
Next. Right. Yeah.
Diaphragm is a. This is for anyone still listening.
Yes.
It's a big thing with like singing teachers. A lot of them don't actually understand the diaphragm. It's not really a muscle. It's a membrane that pulls your lungs down so they can expand with air. So your chest is not your diaphragm. Mm. And your diaphragm is not your stomach. Your diaphragm actually separates your lungs and your guts.
But you could still sing from either of those places.
Well, but they're not the same.
I'm not saying
so a brown note is not. That's like saying falsetto and chest are the same. They're two different places.
All right.
I'm with Josh Covet.
Fine. So you guys are
Covet.
So Jackie, you're still up a point, right?
I guess so.
I want to win. I should be winning by now.
All right.
That's how I feel every episode. But I'm becoming more zen recently, so I've been fighting it less.
This is unfair. This is unfair.
I love this. Fair-listing. You're the new me, because me in the beginning was just a nightmare every time. Always trying to win, super competitive.
There's three questions left, so you can come back.
Okay, cool.
All right.
I'm zen, so whatever.
Question number eight.
Well, then she forfeits.
Samson was a hero from the Bible who famously got his strength from his hair, and he would eventually be betrayed by Delilah, but he had many biblical adventures before that, and this is the story of one of them.
Fun.
Once, he fell in love with a Philistine woman from the city of Timnah, and they decided to get engaged.
No.
At the... No, what?
No, I'm just saying, that's like, I'm following along with this story.
Yeah,
like,
don't fall in love with a Philistine.
Yeah, don't go in that room.
At the wedding feast, Samson told all the gathered men a riddle, promising them all fine linens if they could answer it.
Oh, hell no.
The riddle was, out of the eater, something to eat. Out of the strong, something sweet. What does this riddle mean?
Out of the eater, something to eat.
Out of the strong, something sweet. What did this riddle refer to? A, the eater was a cactus, and something to eat was the sweet flesh inside the cactus. B, the eater was a fox, and something to eat was an ancient delicacy made from boiled fox stomach. C, the eater was a lion, and the something to eat was honey that bees made in a lion corpse. One of those is the real answer to that riddle.
What was the first one?
The eater is a cactus. The something to eat is the sweet flesh inside.
Say the riddle again.
Out of the eater, something to eat. Out of the strong, something sweet.
I think I know my answer.
But you want Jackie to answer first?
I'll let Jackie
You're doing it. You're jamming. I love it.
You go first.
That's what
I
do too.
You don't copy me.
Now, I hate that you did that because that's what I want to do.
Look who's zen.
Stone face. Josh not giving anything away.
One Josh isn't doing tells. The other Josh is baiting me.
Be like the salmon. Jump into that bear's paw.
Which one is it? Okay. You know what? I got a point to lose.
Yeah.
It's just a little quiz. I'm going to say B.
The eater is a fox, and something to eat is an ancient delicacy made from boiled fox stomach. Josh?
I'm going to say C. The boiled fox stomach seems a little too specific.
It turns out, on the way to the wedding, Samson killed a lion, and later passed the lion's corpse and found bees inside and ate some honey, and that inspired the riddle.
No.
What do you mean no? That's the answer.
That's the answer.
The Philistines eventually told Samson's wife they would burn her house down if she didn't tell him the answer to the riddle, so she told them.
That's like something I would do.
Right.
We will
tell
burn
me
your
answer.
House down. Interesting that they didn't say, we'll cut your hair.
No, I know.
Like the one thing that is like,
well, at the time, nobody knew that Samson got his strength from his hair.
Oh, not until
then. Then they told Samson, hey, I got the answer to your riddle, and they told him, hey, the eater is the lion, and the sweet thing is the honey. And he said, if you had not plowed with my heifer, you would not have solved my riddle.
Oh, he called his wife his heifer.
Then he killed them all and burned their fields down.
Oh, God.
And then his bride decided to marry another man.
Jesus.
So the moral of that story is the Bible is messed up.
Chicks don't love violence.
No, they sure don't.
They like the threat of it. But
right.
Yeah,
they
like when you actually do it.
They like a guy who could kill 30 people,
they like a guy that looks like he'll defend him in a bar fight, but like they don't want to see the actual bar fight happen.
Traumatic. Well, I'm mad about that one, because
now we're tied.
Yeah, because now we're tied. That's the main reason I'm mad. But because the one that made the most sense was that one. But then it's like, oh, Josh is just, not you, Josh, other Josh, host Josh is fucking with me. So it has to be B.
Frankly, none of them made
cactus.
Sense.
Frankly, cactus made no sense because there's no cacti.
Not them.
That's,
and,
no.
And cactus don't eat. But also, it's just a terrible riddle no matter how you slice
it. Yeah,
sure.
It is.
Nobody's going to guess that
one,
riddle.
I was like, then once you repeated back that was my answer, I was like, no, this is stupid because you don't really eat carnivores that much. It's right. Very, like, you don't eat carnivores. Mm. So
I guess that's true. Anyway, sorry.
No, I'm mad at myself now.
Be mad at yourself. But you could say, hey, you guys are tied. There's two questions left.
The chest and the diaphragm are the same thing, much like the fox and the lion.
I was doing well, and then it was like, you like got under my skin a little bit. Yeah. I was so zen.
That's crazy. Yeah, stay zen. Be zen. Win this.
All right, got question this. Number 9. Who has the most individual hairs on their head on average? A, redheads. B, brunettes. C, blondes.
I'm going to let you go first on this
We've done something like this.
We've never actually done this question.
I think I know this one,
We had
too,
something about redheads.
I'll let...
You can't keep doing that.
Well, I know... I'm pretty sure I know the right answer, so if you just copy me, then...
I'm trying to, like, feel my head.
How many hairs do I have?
Is this the final question?
This is the second to last question.
Oh, damn.
It's not blondes. They have the least. Fuck. You can answer too. Feel free to answer. Why are we waiting for me?
I also feel like you're really overthinking these too. Not that like that's why you're getting it wrong. It's just like this one especially is funny because it's like redhead, brunette, blonde.
Right.
There's not much.
I just
there's only so many ways to go on this.
Well, there's only three on all of these. I've noticed.
Yeah,
I've noticed. There's only been three.
There's
answers.
Literally only three ways to go on each of these questions.
Unless it's true, false, that's two.
You're right.
You can abstain.
You're right. Okay.
Still abstain.
An average of like 2.75 answers per question.
Josh, you can answer. I mean, I'm not stopping you from answering.
you kind of are. You have to answer this one first because I'm.
Why? I did the last one first.
I'm pretty positive I know the right answer. So
just answer.
But then you're just gonna say my answer.
Yeah, then she's just gonna copy it.
Yeah, you're just gonna copy my answer. Get it on your own merits.
Oh my god!
And then you'll feel good when
I
we both get it right.
I resent that implication.
You're totally going to copy me once I answer.
Yeah,
I know
I
for
will.
A fact.
Well, you know what? You shouldn't have said that you know it so well.
Well, I'm trying to be an interesting guest and, you know, talk out loud. Like on a game show, they want you to talk out loud, you know, be like, ooh,
yeah.
I know this because I, you know, I used to be in the choir. Like that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
So then like when you get it wrong.
It was a snowy day in 1987 and it reminds me of exactly the answer to this question.
As you know, I'm a brunette. One of my best friends is a redhead, and I babysit someone who's you know what I mean, that kind of stuff.
You know, whenever I make these quizzes, I try to engineer it to the guests so they can Slumdog Millionaire their way through the answers.
Millionaire,
and be like, oh, this reminds me of an important event from my childhood.
This is hard because one of my best friends, her cousin is a redhead, and she has long, beautiful red hair.
Mm.
The other redhead I know is. Oh,
bald.
Right.
No. She's one of those redheads that's like orange redheads. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Strawberry blonde.
Fake redheads.
No, they're red, but like they don't have white skin and freckles. They're tan and they have red hair.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And it's weird.
Yeah.
Like a lot of Hispanic redheads.
Not gingers, you know? Just like
Ginger.
Yeah, not like but like Dan on our team. He's a redhead.
Yeah.
Mm. Not a lot of hair. All
right.
Brunettes. I'm going with brunettes.
Jack is going with brunettes. Josh?
Blondes.
Josh is right.
What? Oh, I want to go home.
That's the weird thing about it because people with blonde with fair hair actually have more hair.
They have thinner hair, so more hair is needed to properly cover the scalp, is what geneticists think is the reason.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
So there's more follicles on
redheads
the head?
Have, on average, 90,000 hairs. Brunettes have 110,000. Blondes have 140,000.
Oh, I did not know that redheads have the least. Though.
Redheads have the least hair. Yeah, they do.
I knew that.
So persecuted.
I hate this.
Okay. All right.
So, Jackie, you can at least tie.
You can
if you can get this right.
Tie.
How many hairs does the average person lose per day?
Oof.
60, 100, 200.
Oof. I'll let you take this one, Josh.
Me? Okay.
Yeah.
60?
100, 200. How many hairs does the average person lose per day?
B and C, they're close, so yeah. There's a range. B and C seem a little patterned, so maybe leaning towards A. But I'm gonna split the middle. I'm gonna split the diff.
Split the diff.
The old STD. and go B.
I'm gonna go 100. With 100.
I'm gonna go with a hundo.
Jackie.
Cool hundo.
Cool hundo.
Which is horrible to think, but
man, I was thinking 100, and I was trying to think of my own head. And if I lose that much hair a day, because I have longer hair, so I might be able to tell. We're talking body hair too.
We were talking about scalp hair.
Scalp hair.
Okay.
But think about the ones that just pop off, and you know when you're walking,
yeah.
You're not gonna see those. We don't all lose our hair on our kitchen floor.
Yeah, those little swimmers that just get away.
But like when you have long hair, it tends to get on your clothes or something.
Sure.
So it's not just gonna like fall to the ground. It doesn't like just...
No. Yeah, it's around. Yeah. It's probably.
I'm so mad. Oh.
What's your chance?
I want to tie. I don't want you to win. You know what?
All right.
Here's the thing. If I pick B, I can't win. So I'm gonna pick A.
Oh, good. That's a fun strategy.
That is a fun strategy.
Don't say it. I lost.
No. Unfortunately, it means you lost.
Oh, that was a smart strategy.
It was 100. Yeah, but good try. And Jackie's taking the headphones off, and she's horribly disappointed.
Adjourned.
I was doing so well.
Yeah.
I was. So
yeah, you were killing it earlier.
You were doing good. You started off high, and then got cocky.
No, it's not even that. It's not even about the points. It's about the attitude. You know.
Mm-hmm. Look,
I could have lost and been fine.
Look, don't be a salmon.
You
don't
can be still
a salmon.
Be fine.
Don't be a salmon.
You can still be fine.
Just go with the flow.
I want to say that our best quiz guest was Betsy Stover because mm-hmm. Betsy's the one person that didn't make me feel upset or competitive. Oh. Everybody else is getting under my skin and making me want to win really hard.
You know, she is really friendly.
If I was not so zen.
Oh, you're the zen
I would
one now.
See that as a...
Well, now you that you've
when
won,
I,
it's
when
easy
I
to
won,
do
I ascended into a higher level of consciousness. So thank you, Josh, for giving that.
Wow!
To me.
I think
if
I was gave
not,
you that too.
If I was not so balanced, I would interpret that as, you know, maybe a antagonistic or
yes,
angry thing towards me. But I
no, it's not you,
know, Josh. You're welcome, and I accept your good vibes of graciousness. And as a prize,
I'm
for,
sitting here
thank
too.
Thank you, Josh.
I understand, Jackie. As a prize for winning this quiz. You could tell the listeners of Accept the Mystery, where can they find your interesting projects online?
Oh, online. Let's see.
Or in person. Online. Or in person if they want to meet you in person.
Or if they want
house.
To meet. Yeah, come to my address. in person, every week, I'm at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater in Hollywood, California. 5919 Franklin Avenue. Performing with a Herald team. Called Outside Dog.
Outside Dog, the fantastic Outside Dog.
At the
outside
beginning.
Doge.
Usually outside dogs. Usually Mondays. Sometimes we do a Friday matinee. Online, let's see. At Josh Covid is my Twitter and my Instagram. There's a couple photos of dogs surfing right now on Instagram.
Yeah, we were talking about that. I didn't even know dog surfing
was a thing. Get them while you can.
I've become enlightened.
There's some of the funny sketch videos you can find, really, if you just search me. Online.
Search for Josh Covet on Google and look at the sketches.
And some of you might even come to realize that there's one viral video I'm in that might be a big shocker to you because a lot of people thought it was a real thing, you know. And then it'll be like, oh, this is fake too. What is? There's no God. There's no God. I'm gonna kill an Arab / extort a
the guy having an affair.
Yeah, the owner of a big department store.
Yes. That's my ticket to success, is dry cleaning. I still believe it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But these would all be things that would I would like you to do if I still believed in worldly things.
Of course. But you don't
before
care
before I won
anymore.
The quiz.
Wow.
Namaste.
Wow.
I don't care about worldly things anymore either. I only care about Twitter, which is not of this world. It's in a higher plane. Just go to @RadioTFB on Twitter. And check out things I say and what I do.
Mm-hmm.
Jackie, you can, of course, go to @MacLean on Twitter.
Yeah, MacQuelin. Hermione. Wait, Josh Richmond, how am I doing overall on my scores on quizzes?
Oh wow, this is really
this is bugging you. This is getting to you.
Yeah, it is.
I got to go through the record. I think I'm
up though.
But I believe overall you're up.
I believe that. Yeah.
I believe your last couple quizzes actually you won.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is your first lost and won.
I think I beat Betsy.
Yep.
I beat Joe Hartzler.
You beat Joe Hartzler. You beat Jeremy.
Oh man, that was too easy though.
Yeah. Mm.
Jeremy's. All right, fine. Then I'm still a winner.
You're doing great.
I'm still a winner. You can go to my Twitter.
We're both doing great.
I'm doing better, but we're both doing great.
Well, I'm undefeated.
That's true. Technically, he's got a better percentage.
Wow. Fine.
Yeah.
Josh is a winner.
But if you guys, know what I mean, down the road, if you don't have a guest, you know what I mean, you need to fill.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That means you get another crack.
Right. Then you could go down to 50%.
That's true.
Or you could maintain my
perfect record.
I don't want to think about all these horrible permutations of me not winning.
Or we could tie and I would still be undefeated.
That's true.
Okay.
That's true. 1-0.
Order, order, order. All right, people?
And on that note, Josh, thank you so much for stopping by the show. It's always a pleasure to have another Josh in the studio.
Oh, Josh. So great to be with another Josh.
Always. Josh is, they just got, there's just
all
a
right,
thing.
Josh,
it's like I'm in a room talking to myself.
No. And all of our names started with J.
Yeah.
So we got that.
And we're all Jews, and Jews starts with J.
J,
and it all
Jews.
Just makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Till next time, guys. Peace and love.
Peace and love.